calls and connecting.
Blog Talk Radio.
You know, whether it's you're driving home and I'll call Sparaugh, you know, I try to connect with Sparaugh a bunch because we go way back. And I don't know, you know, you can just bounce some things off and you think your life is going down this terrible road and he'll pull you back to the center sometimes, you know, so it's...
Yeah, I remember just this year myself, I had a conversation with Rob Patrick early on. This is just right after they lost Jeter, you know, for the year. And, man, we had some injuries and some stuff going on. And we were kind of just both, literally, I mean, it wasn't a long conversation, but, you know, we both kind of told each other it was going to be okay. You know, they go and win the SEC. We win the ASUN. And, you know, it was kind of funny because we came back to the conversation at the end of the year like, hey, you know, it did work out.
Yeah,
so
all right.
It's nice to have that.
Hey, if you're just joining us here on the Net Live, we're just coming on live. Appreciate you being here. We had some technical difficulties getting the show scheduled. Been sitting here talking to Eric Sullivan, and right in the middle of convention here in San Antonio, Kevin Barnett sitting with Brandon Rosenthal, Eric Sullivan of Texas. We got a Mizuno trivia shootout coming up. Net Live and Volleyball Magazine working together. Going to have a trivia shootout just following the program here, live in convention. We're right next to the sand court if you want to try and find us. Good stuff going on. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. Lots of guests to come. All kinds of people are going to be joining us. We've got the final four coaches coming in. Destiny Hooker is supposed to be by at some point. Nice. Alex Jupiter, allegedly. TK, Tim Kelly, international super agent, Nicaraguan Bear.
I'm glad to have Higa here. I'm no longer the guy that has to do all the grunt work now.
No, you're on air, baby. You're the fourth man in this whole operation. We appreciate you being here. Kevin Barnett, Brandon Rosenthal, The Net Live. More in a minute.
Volleyball Mag, the industry's number one volleyball magazine. Volleyball Magazine has been serving the volleyball community for over 20 years with the latest in volleyball news and information, product reviews, athlete profiles, fitness, health, and travel-related features. It's published 9 times a year. Volleyball Magazine brings you the inside to the access to the sport's biggest stars. Whether you're interested in the junior, collegiate, or professional level, sand or indoor, Volleyball Magazine has you covered both on and off the court. Visit us now. Do it. www.volleyballmag.com and subscribe for 1 year for only $19.99. Do that now and receive a new water bottle, a $49 value, free compliments of our friends at Naturally Energized Water Bottle Company. Volleyball Mag, the industry's number one volleyball magazine.
Welcome back in the Net Live here on the VolleyballNetwork.com. There will be a champion coming up tomorrow night. Illinois versus UCLA. This is the dream matchup as far as I'm concerned. This is a Zoolander walk-off. Sealy versus Hambly. Best dressed man. And you could even throw in there David Niffen and his sweater he was rocking last night.
Yeah. You said it best the other day. Who's going to break out blue steel first?
Who's your money on? That's fine. Let it play, baby. Brandon Rosenthal, Brandon Higa here helping out, Mississippi State's own, being our technical consultant. Hey, just make sure that computer's covered up. Nobody gets on that thing right now. Just cover it up with a sheet or something. We're sitting here live in the Coach's Zone, San Antonio Convention, right by the Riverwalk. Fantastic location for this convention. I don't want to diss Kansas City, Brandon, but this is a little bit better than freezing cold by the Sprint Center.
Yeah, the wind last night was funny. I mean, it literally, we walked out of the hotel.
It was time to go.
And it was like a 7-minute walk, but we made it there in 4 with the tailwind.
Somebody higher up knew that we needed to get there quickly. We didn't want to miss first serve. And we blew into the Alamo Dome, literally.
Yeah, it was a brisk walk yesterday, but not nearly as cold as Kansas City. Next year should be fun, too. Louisville
will be fantastic. Louisville. We're hoping to make a couple of trips there next year. Of course, we missed our live event this past year. Hey, over there in the coaches' zone, I see Karen over there from your own conference. She better get over here and get on this Mizuno Trivia Shootout. The Net Live and Volleyball Magazine doing the Mizuno Trivia Shootout. Going to be happening right after our program, about 5:30 local time here. Show up, answer some questions about volleyball, trivia answers. You get 6-8 of those right, you're taking home an iPad, too. That's a big deal. Could use an iPad, too, with your little Nook or whatever you got rolling here.
It's a Galaxy Tab.
Galaxy Tab, yeah. RIM makes that. They're going out of business. Good luck.
Samsung. They're kind of a small company.
Haven't heard of them. No idea who that is.
Yeah.
Hey, we got a big guest list fired up for you here. We got all Final Four coaches going to be showing up, allegedly. We're working on Seeley. We're working on Hambly coming in after practice. We're waiting on a call here now. I think we have Chris Poole right now. 850, Higa? Or Rosenthal?
Let me check on that. I think that's it.
I think that's our man.
Go ahead.
He took his team to a Final Four appearance and ended up losing last night to UCLA. Did a fantastic job, and luckily the NCAA let him stick around for just a little while. Welcome once again to the Net Live, Chris Poole. Chris.
Hey, how's it going, Kevin?
Good. I appreciate you making the time to call back in and chat with us. A lot of fun being at the All-American Banquet this afternoon. Of course, with one of your players being honored. Fantastic event. Talk about your team and their reaction to being a part of this Final Four.
It was overwhelming for them. They did a great job. They worked all year hard. And I think the experience was just unbelievable for them. You know, it'll be something that obviously we can take and build on for the future. You know, 4 years ago they hadn't even been in the NCAA tournament but one time in 10 years. So the whole process of trying to build this program is something that's been exciting, but the girls have worked very hard with it.
Chris, this is Brandon Rosenthal. Hey, just talk about the experience for you, having great success, obviously, at Arkansas, and now taking another program to even a higher level, and just kind of what that means for you and what we can expect to come over the next year.
Well, you know, I think in each step of my career, it's something that I've tried to move even further. You know, I started as a Division I coach at Arkansas State and was the first one to take them to an NCAA tournament, and that was when they were only taking 32 teams into the tournament. And then going to Arkansas and being able to build a program where we were in postseason 11 of the 14 years, you know, I really felt like Florida State was an opportunity to go even further, to build even further because of the name and being in the state of Florida. And there's just a lot of great things that have gone on at Florida State. And certainly Bobby Bowden made a big name for it. And, you know, I think the biggest thing is there's a lot of great players that are coming out of high school and club these days. And so it's giving a lot of coaches and schools like myself a chance to be able to get some of those great players, where before there was such a few number of great ones, you just didn't have enough to go around.
Chris, have you actually hurt your own prospects for keeping that job long-term by producing a Final Four appearance so quickly?
Well, we certainly, you know, our job is to do the best we can and get as far as we can. Now, if someone would have told me we were going to be able to do it this year, I would have said, well, I wasn't sure we were there yet. But I knew we had talent, and I knew, you know, a lot of it has to do with getting the right breaks, getting the right opportunities, and taking advantage of whatever is given. And for our girls, they just kept fighting. They fought They fought all through last weekend with Purdue and Iowa State. And even last night, the one thing that I told them between games two and three, and they were disappointed with the way they were playing, but I said, look, you don't want to leave just rolling over. You want to give it everything you got, and let's show them what we're capable of doing. And the third set, I was very proud of them. They came back and really competed. I wish that would have been the first set, but still they show character on being able to come back and fight. And it was a new experience for them. We had a few young ones that played a little nervous, and I think that's to be expected. Now they've learned from that experience, and they can pass that down to the next generation of players.
You're listening to Net Live here on the VolleyballNetwork.com. We are live from San Antonio in convention in the coach's zone right next to the sand court. Come on by if you're around. We've got the trivia contest going on afterwards. You can sign up right next to our broadcast position. We're talking to Final Four head coach Chris Poole from Florida State University.
Chris, talk about UCLA and maybe kind of the things that you saw last night and maybe what to expect tomorrow night.
You know, I thought they did an unbelievable job against us. Kidder just, you know, we just wasn't able to slow her down at all. And that was one of my concerns, is if their left sides got into a rhythm and got going, we would have to try to be able to try to slow them down some. And unfortunately, the first two games particularly, we just didn't. It took us a little while. Even the, you know, blocking is such a big key for our team. Well, the first couple of sets, only a couple of blocks per game. Finally, the third set, we started cranking it up, and we actually had five that set. And so sometimes against good hitters, against good teams, it just takes a little bit longer to try to get into the rhythm you need to see what the hitters in offense is trying to do. I think it's going to be a great battle tomorrow. Obviously, Kevin has done an unbelievable job there at Illinois as well. They're a very aggressive team. Both these teams have been ranked number one during the year, so they're, you know, everyone knows how legit they are. And that match last night with USC was just unbelievable. And I think it's going to be the same kind of final. I think it's going to be a very, very strong contest. And those girls, for UCLA, as long as the big ones can keep hammering, it's, you know, you got to try to figure out a way to slow them down.
Chris, do you think it's possible the NetLive curse will make you lose your second match of next season?
Well, you know, I think certainly right now we'll take all the publicity we can get and, you know, try to build a program. And you know, I certainly look at going up, you know, we want to try to play good schedules. People have talked a lot about our schedule this year. It ended up that 9 of our 10 non-conference matches were in the NCAA tournament, and 6 of those had won their respective conferences, and 4 of them were in the Sweet 16. So that's the kind of balance I'm trying to get every year. I want to get, as a matter of fact, I'm not sure that anyone can claim 9 of 10 that went into the NCAA tournament. I just kind of went down the list a little bit, starting into the top 10 schedules, and that's kind of what I try to look for every year. And if you do that, then you know you're taking a chance of getting a loss. But at the same time, if you're playing great competition, you're also giving your team a chance to prepare for conference and a chance to try to go deep into the NCAA tournament.
Hey, Chris, one last question. We know you have to go. You guys are traveling home today, and I want to ask you about that. The NCAA sends you home almost immediately. In fact, you had to change your flight so you didn't have to fly out before the All-American banquet where one of your players was honored. How do you feel about that? Would it be beneficial for your players to stay and be a part of the final and get a chance to watch the final and finish out what they really are a part of? I mean, this Final Four event is not just about the finals and the last two teams. It's about Thursday through Saturday and all four squads.
Yeah, well, certainly, you know, you're a little at the mercy of when you're being able to travel. I think it would have been a great opportunity for the girls to see the final, certainly. You know, you also talk about timing, too, and that's one thing that was going on this week. I'd read, I think, where USC was taking finals this week. This was our finals week also. So we had a lot of our players with scheduled flights this weekend that were working to try to change those, and particularly had we been later, some of them would have really got into a bind on trying to make changes. And right now, the way it's set up compliance-wise, I think it's my understanding you pretty much have got to get them back within about 24 hours by NCAA compliance to, you know, get them back on campus. So, you know, it is what it is that way. Certainly our girls love the experience that they had there. It'll be something they'll remember the rest of their lives. And I have a lot of respect for the three teams that all made it, and great coaches and great teams, and wish best of luck to both Illinois and UCLA both. It's going to be a great match. It'll be great for volleyball.
Chris Poole is the head coach at Florida State University, where he's doing a tremendous job taking his team to the Final Four this season. Chris, thanks so much for making time to join us. Safe journeys home. We'll hope to talk to you again next year.
Okay. Thank you both, Kevin, Brandon.
Thank you.
Talk to you later.
Thanks,
bye.
Chris. All right. Fantastic stuff. We're going to bring into the program now an old friend, a guy who used to work with us when he wasn't such a big time. But now that he's moved on, he's all about Pujols and Odom. You might remember his voice from this show just a few weeks ago and from a few years before that. Chris McGee.
It's amazing how you, Reed, and Brandon just act like I'm not a part of the show anymore. I mean, it's amazing how I've been kicked to the side, but I will keep calling in and trying to get back on the team.
Geeter, I had to run to Kinko's last night so I could get my picture done up so I could put it over your face on the poster.
Well, listen, if Barnett was smart, he would leave my picture up there because it'll draw the audience. But, you know, Barnett, I thought he was drinking last night, Brandon, because I texted him and we're going back and forth. I asked him how the feedback is with the show, and all he wrote was, they hate you, love me. I mean, that's Barnett for you.
Geeter, I miss you.
Oh, you love that,
Geeter. I miss you.
And
who do we got back there? Is that Ann Cortis?
Ann Cortis.
I tell you what.
Louisville
I
head coach.
I came over to this table looking for you, and this is the second time I've been disappointed.
What, looking for him? Ann, please.
I know.
I got to tell you something. The only reason why I almost went to the Final Four was for Ann Cortis, and I can't wait for Louisville to host the Final Four next year when I am in attendance.
There you go.
We're going to be there twice because you're not going to bail out on trip number one down there. Ann is still mad at you for that.
No, believe me, everyone is. Everybody's mad at me these days.
I can't be mad at you. You just give me the smash, you know, flash me that smile. Flash me that cute smile. We're good. I can hear it right now.
I would have loved to have heard Chris talk about that match last night. What a great job they did getting there. It was unfortunate that they didn't play their best, you know, so I would have loved to have heard what he had to say. But incredible job by him in Florida State. But UCLA was just almost perfect last night.
Yeah, UCLA looked pretty good. They did a nice job. And we've got Ann here sitting in with us. Ann, talk about your upcoming presidency. Have they given you a ring,
well, we're
a crown?
Well, we're talking about the stipend. But this is all I want. This is all I want to be the down ref for the finals tomorrow. I want to be in between Mike Seeley and Kevin Hambly.
Ooh, that is a handsome sandwich right there.
That's all I want.
Handsome sandwich.
That's it.
Can I get a show of handsome for that? I mean, if you've seen the Handsome Men's Club on Jimmy Kimmel.
Oh, my gosh.
I need a show of handsome.
Really, you just bumped it all up with that haircut.
Oh, were you into George Harrison before? Or?
No, at all.
Clean,
like, don't
clean
get me wrong.
Cut?
I mean, he's a great-looking guy, but when he clean cut, he looks amazing. Fantastic.
Let me get this straight, Ann. You're into tall, clean cut gentlemen.
That's
is that
right.
True?
Bald.
Sorry, Geeta.
Bald?
Yeah, sometimes bald.
I got to tell you guys, Seeley went from like Occupy LA to GQ. It was amazing what happened with that haircut.
That's right. Mick Haley a little bit disappointed because he couldn't occupy the NCAA with my family.
He's dressed nice. He's got, you know, he looks a little preppy this weekend. No jeans. I'm really impressed.
And you're a part of this event and what's going on here the last 2 years and so on. You've been in this world for a long time. Is this event getting bigger and better every season?
It's absolutely getting bigger. Where attendance figures are up just for the AVCA convention. Our NCAA ticket sales are up for our first, second rounds and regionals. We were up 25,000 tickets this year. So that's huge. And I think that's an important, important aspect. Everybody wants to talk about, the NCAA brackets. And
if
we're going to seed the 64, bottom line is that our championship needs to make money, and that's not where we are yet. And so if we want to get to that point, instead of just seeding that top 16, then we've got to keep, create some venues where we're selling out matches, and I think that we're there. Now it becomes also making sure the right teams and programs are putting into bid. Teams that have a great following, because I think it's going to make a big difference.
Talk about just the new kind of model this year, where the top 16 teams, got the opportunity to host, how that affected the attendance.
Absolutely. Top 16 teams not only does it affect attendance, of course, but it's such a home court advantage to put you in a position more than ever, I think, to take care of your non-conference play, looking at how you're going to schedule. It affects who you want to play on the road. You know, if you think your team's a much better team at home as compared to on the road, then you want to play some of those tougher non-conference matches at home. And so then it really takes into consideration how what you're scheduling for your pre-conference and early part of the year, because we're seeing how much that affects you at the late part of the year. You know, and of course for the NCAA, we have to take into consideration the geography. The standard right now for the NCAA when we're figuring out where everyone is going to go after the teams are seated and after the teams are selected are the less flights as possible. But I also think that's a good thing in terms of if a whole bunch of people aren't flying, that means that, you know, their fan base can drive. And so hopefully that means we can keep people following their teams and selling a lot of tickets.
I still really want to see the difference in a line item between if you seeded at 64 and the result and the actual tournament, because it cannot be that big compared to $717 million.
I don't know, and that's where I think it's interesting. You know, we had the committee in a meeting, a Division I head coaches meeting, the NCAA committee the other day, and they agreed to take us through, like a webinar type scenario, you know, where how they seeded it and how it went and what discussions came into place. But now there's a software that they use. The software, you put in the teams, the 64 teams that go, and then the software computes where you're going to have the least amount of flights. Well, they do that.
Goodness.
Well, then they take into consideration that you're not going to play anyone in your conference. You know, you're not, you know, they take that into consideration. And so then by that model, they figure it out. I think we would all like to get to the point where it's 64 seeded. It would be interesting to see what happens and who can get some momentum in the tournament. And, of course, keep it fair for teams that are, you know, that where it's so strong on the West Coast. And, you know, and fair for teams that are on the East Coast, you know.
Hey, Ann, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
You know, now that I've done some matches the last couple of years, I've gotten to travel around a little bit and see a lot of new venues and then watching them on TV, on ESPNU and Longhorn Network and Big Ten Network. And Kevin and I have talked about this. It seems to me more than ever there are great places to play women's college volleyball in terms of fans and atmospheres. You know, Iowa State jumps off the page at me and, you know, I've been to Florida. That was a great atmosphere. And there's, you know, they're all over the place. Do you see more and more better atmospheres in women's college volleyball? How close are we to, you know, to getting to that goal that you were talking about earlier?
Well, you know, here's the thing. I don't know how many. It all depends on how much we're charging and if we're charging. You know, for instance, our students free. You know, I've never been to Texas A&M, but it came up at dinner the other night that they have a ridiculous crowd. And they have a very loud student section that, you know, there's a cheer guide and, you know, that has them going. The other part is, I think that, you know, we've got, people are conditioned to a really inexpensive ticket in volleyball. And when it comes down to the NCAA tournament, we've got to build such loyalty.
Volleyball people are cheap.
That they're, yes, there you go.
Try getting them advertised on this show,
We've got to get to the point where then once NCAA comes and the tickets are now up to $10 or $15 for a session, that they're going to still do it. And that really, I think, correlates to the students, not much the parents or the fans. But you're going to get those 400 students to come and be out of control, especially if they haven't been paying all year.
Listen, the second line out of my mouth when we're promoting this show is, it's free to download.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Price right. All right, Brandon Rose, the last question. We got to move on to Mick Haley here.
Just talk about what we can expect from 2012 from the city of Louisville.
Louisville.
And what to expect. And by the way, Geeter and Barnett want to go to Churchill Downs. They've already put that in their contract.
We talked to a couple jockeys, and if you guys stay on that diet that I sent you, we might be able to get you a couple.
I don't really like grapefruit juice that much, Ann.
Yeah, I know, but you know, it's going to get you a couple turned around the lawn.
Geeter needs some help. I heard some noise around New Year's last year, but he's back to all work all the time.
No, but Louisville, I tell you what, it's a great city for conventions. We got great restaurants. There's a great bar scene. We have a fantastic venue, and I think the city of Louisville people don't have a bad time there because everyone's so darn friendly, you know. And I think that's what you're going to see. And we're excited. We're the volleyball crazy town,
sweet.
You know. So it's going to be a great event.
Yeah, the venue itself is the newest world class.
The Yum Center.
That's Yum.
Yum Center.
With an it's got a exclamation point there at the end. Even
it's
got
to be good.
Drive it home.
And we always love when you sit down with us.
Thanks,
for a few
guys.
Minutes. Appreciate it. Like
Geeter.
How your necklace matches your neck.
Thanks, Ann.
Geeter, have a good holiday.
Ann, I miss us.
All right, I do too.
All right. Ann Cordes from Louisville. Thanks, Ann.
Thanks, guys.
Good stuff. Yeah, we got Mick Haley sitting down next. This is always a jam-packed
show. I love it.
Hardly have time to play commercials.
Geeter, are you going to stay with us?
For a little bit, guys.
Okay.
Right on. Right on.
Can't wait to talk to Coach.
Yeah, we got Mick Haley. So we started with Chris Poole. Now on the other side, Mick Haley involved in an incredible five-set, just epic match, which ended with an epic rally with the Illini.
The rally was incredible.
It was the longest rally I've ever seen, honestly.
On a championship point.
Not just championship, but it was honestly one of the longest rallies I've ever seen. No tips.
I heard it made SportsCenter.
Did it?
I heard they put it on SportsCenter, and it's only second to the rally I saw earlier in the year when they actually showed one on SportsCenter. I think it was 19 times across the net, but nothing was on the line like it was last night for Mick Haley and his Trojans. As now Mick Haley sits down, puts on the headphones, and he's back in. I like having you here live rather than just on the phone.
Why?
Well, because now we get a feel. We get to see the emotion and the passion and the anger. And yeah. So, Mick, talk to us about last night's match. Fifth set really comes down to it. Talk about what you told your team going into that fifth set.
Well, actually, you don't tell them too many things different than what we were doing in the first set. I mean, we just needed to stay focused. We rotated again. We started rotating because Illinois was getting comfortable with us. We started rotating and showing different looks and that sort of thing. We went to our best scoring lineup, which maybe was a good thing or not, but it allowed them to get their 6-5 kid on Alex. But that really didn't really hurt us because she continued to score. They started out with a couple of we missed a dig and didn't pass very well and got ourselves behind a little bit. That was more troubling, and then we got back into it and we're playing well. So it wasn't too much of what I said because they know. I mean, we've just been in 2 5-game matches, heart thumpers, and they know what they have to do, and they're good about that, and that's the specialness of this team. It wasn't a lot of magic going on or any of that stuff. It was just simply, let's play volleyball now. And my little libero, Haglund, she goes out there and says, bring it on, and everybody follows.
She did that to me today at the banquet.
Yeah, let's talk about the stare. I mean, first of all, I thought Natalie Haglund was the best speech up there. But
give people the background who weren't there what Haglund said.
So Barnett finishes the question with, who does the best impersonation? And who did she say, Alex?
I can't remember who she
Olgaard,
said.
Olgaard, right?
Olgaard.
Olgaard. And said, Mick does this stare for literally like 45 seconds. And
probably 3 seconds. To them, it seems like 45
Everything's just built up.
All right, so hit Rosenthal with it. Intimidate Rosenthal. Look. Oh, you're not even looking at him.
I see it out of the corner of my eye. I don't want to look. I can't look.
Hey, Barney.
Yes.
Chris, I'd love to jump in. I got a question for Coach. Coach, it's Geeter. First of all, congratulations on such an amazing year. I know you and your staff did such a good job. And I'm at home watching that game, so it's different when you're at home watching on TV. My thought is, wow, this is great for women's volleyball. It's one of the epic matches. But I'm not sitting in your shoes. After the match, and now that you've had time to reflect on it, what are your thoughts on that match and ultimately what you thought was the difference? Did you need more blocks or – here and there. I just love to hear what your thoughts on the match were and how you guys could have won it.
Well, in retrospect, like in Hawaii, the reason we were able to stay in the match in Hawaii is we won the second game. The reason we lost this match is we let the third game escape us. We had a 22-19 lead, and we were not willing to take risks to win it. And that's a difficult thing to coach at that particular time, but when it happens, it just happens. You have to move on. And Hawaii, we took some risks. We won, I think, 29-27 in the second game. It gave us a 1-1 split to put it into a best 2 out of 3. In this situation, we could have been up 2-1 going into the fourth game, and we had our legs in. We had them taking a step back, and I just felt like if we got into a fifth, we might not be as strong. But you know, that's just my feeling, and that's how it turned out. But the kids determine that. It's just it's a guess. It's a guess by the coaches as well as it is people watching.
Coach, one of the things I saw last night was some what I thought great play by Lauren Williams, and just hitting wise, I thought she did a really nice job, and really, obviously. Alex is your big gun and whatnot, but I thought you did some nice stuff. And can you talk about that, you know, progression?
Well, all year our middles have been the thing that's allowed our outsides to score, and our passing's been the key to that. Sarah Shaw stabilizes our passing with Haglund, and then everybody chips in. And so Williams has been great all season, but the NC2A tournament, for some reason, she and Kendall lost their ability to connect. And last night we just made it a point to say we have to score in the middle to keep these guys off of Alex and Shaw and Fuller. So Lauren did her job. I mean, almost a little higher than 3 kills per game.
She had 18 kills.
Yeah, in a 5-6. That's as much as we could have expected out of her, and I thought it was great. The only thing I thought she should have done in that fifth game is swing at 12-10 rather than try to tip that three. That, again, not wanting to risk, she tried to jam, and I you know, if you're going to win, you know, really you have to take some risks at the right time, and they have to be calculated, and you can't be afraid of being the goat if you miss. And she decided to play it safe and try to jam, and of course that didn't work. So, but you can't fault her for that. She contributes 18 kills. That got us there, so that's good.
Coach, we were sitting off the end line up in one of the boxes watching from that perspective, and what we saw was the Illinois hitters hitting down the line, and Rosendahl here was yelling that Haley should close the line.
Yeah, Haley was yelling, close the line. I'm absolutely mystified. Our game plan was to seal that thing at the antenna. I am mystified why our right fronts came off that antenna, and I asked them in the timeouts. But it's interesting. It's an interesting study of what happens to you in competition, because I have the best team I have ever had about paying attention, making corrections, and doing well. And last night, for some reason, either fatigue, whatever, I don't know, we couldn't do that. You know, until we got them to move the serve-receive pattern deeper, one step deeper, we were just getting pummeled by the serve. The middle of game three, we started moving the receive pattern back, but I had to go out there almost every play and say, one step back. And I had Haglund, who I thought would really do this, and she's telling him one step back, and then she takes a step forward. And so, you know, it wasn't really, you know, this is why it's so interesting under pressure what happens to people, because their perception is they're doing that.
Right.
And in actuality, that's not happening. So the perception by the outside blockers was, coach, we're sealing it. And yet it would go outside the blocker. And our middle backs were not supposed to worry about line. They were supposed to be in seam. And when that happened, we got great digs. Shaw got some of those great digs in 4 and 5 there because the blockers did what they were supposed to do. But, you know, I was right there with you doing the same yelling, steal line.
There you go, Rosendahl.
No, I mean, a lot of times in coaching, you know, you can do all the preparation. You talk to Eric Sullivan about game plans and scouting reports and whatnot, and at some point, you know, it doesn't matter. They've got to go out and execute those plays, and, you know, especially at this level. The difference in winning and losing a lot of times is that, you know, margin of error in that execution.
Yeah, it's a very small window you're talking about at this level. And, Coach, the Illinois outsides had a great night. They played well. Illinois is a team that has been kind of through some ups and downs this year. UCLA is a team that looks like it's peaking at just the right moment. They've been through their own struggles this season in what was a season of parity. Give us your pick for the finals.
Well, I hadn't played Illinois. Karch called me and asked me who I thought was the best team that we played, and I said by far the Bruins are the best team we played. There's no question that Mike's team, when they're executing, are very difficult to deal with. Even though we got him the second time, he was messing around, and you know, it was the last match of the season. He couldn't win the conference. He's letting the seniors play. I'm not telling my kids that, but you know, it was pretty obvious to me that we got the win, but we really didn't do anything to their mindset.
Yeah, you didn't see the first team.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll take it, but let's play them again. That was the whole deal. I wanted to play them one more time. And I hadn't played Illinois, but I've watched Illinois, and I thought they were a strong team, but I didn't think they could light us up like that. You know, they had, what, 59 kills on the left side or something like that, and we had 50, and I just didn't think that would happen. I, like I said, I thought our block over there would be good enough, at least in three rotations. I could see one of those kids going off, but I couldn't see both of them going off on us, and when that happened, of course, I should qualify that. Well, I didn't see both Hawaii's left sides being able to go off on us either, and the freshman was amazing, 25 kills against us and brought the heat.
Yeah.
So 2 weeks in a row, we saw the best efforts from three teams. I mean, Pepperdine's kids.
Yeah, that was an incredible match.
Leila just gave us every speed change you could give us to screw up our block timing. Hill was great at moving the ball around. The other left side for Pepperdine did a nice job but didn't score, and that's why we won. We were able to take one of those kids out, Desing. Messing. Yeah. So, you know, that was our success factor with those guys, but we just couldn't do it last night.
Coach, we sure appreciate the time you spent with us sitting down here. We know the NCAA is sending you home this evening as well.
I'm not going.
Oh, you're refusing?
No, I'm occupying, yeah.
Stepping out his hair like ceiling.
Well, pitch a tent nearby here. We'll talk to you.
All right.
All right, thank you. Yep. Coach McHaley.
Thanks, Coach.
Kind enough to join us for another session sitting down. Coach, thanks very much. Thanks very much. Good stuff. Hey, we got Tim Kelly coming up next here on the Net Live. Live from convention, we had a half hour. We were rolling. We do have the trivia contest coming up, the Net Live Volleyball Magazine Mizuno Trivia Shootout. iPad 2. We got to get that filled in over here. Come on, Jody.
Hey, Barnett, how many sponsors have you signed for the show?
Hey, man, I've been busy just working. I've signed nobody. I just came from the AVCA convention. Still suit pants on, NetLive t-shirt available.
It's a classy look.
Hey, we've got t-shirts available for the NetLive right here. Talk to my man Brandon Higa from Mississippi State. Come on over and pick one up. We'll be right back. The NetLive, thevolleyballnetwork.com.
Adrenaline shot. I'm doing a fluid busting through with new moves. Whether you like it or not, you see, I've learned a lot. A bit of who I am and most of what I'm not. So I gotta give 100% of all that I got and can't die till I'm on the side with my name on the rock away. Chill, best booked with the heart after God. Ain't about to stop. Battles are fought. William Wallace, brave heart, strictly fight for the cause. And I've been given the same as the rest of you got. This never ending rope with knots, and I can never fall off because I'm always reaching for the top. Peace to my mom and pop for this knowledge of rock and for the wisdom I drop. And every man stand up, I got the key one lock and the back's covered similar to having a dozen older brothers, man, but that is before. I'm just speaking over this joint like I never could duck and doubt. No doubt the appearance has changed, boy to man. I'm looking in the mirror, get it together, keeps no longer clever. Just try to be a man, name, and let's act like one, cause they don't want to hear complaining. Just get the job done.
Welcome back in the Net Live here on the volleyballnetwork.com. That's a little Nate Adams for those of you calling at home. Man can ride FMX and throw down some mad rhymes and beats. We're live here in Convention San Antonio. Lots of stuff happening. Sessions going on over the place. We're here near the coach's zone, right behind the Rocks booth, next to the volleyball court, the sand court. And we have a Rocks athlete with us, somebody that I've been hoping would come on the show for a long time. Had a nice Facebook chat with her. Thought, all right, we got to get this fantastic athlete on the show. Welcome, all-star opposite hitter from the U.S. Women's National Team, Destiny Hooker.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to San Antonio.
Right in the mic there, Destiny. This is your hometown, huh?
Yes, it is.
This is your stomping ground. You're back here hanging out, telling everybody how you should play volleyball. So let's take you back a couple of years and get your memories from playing in what was an epic Final Four match. You guys didn't come out on top, but it was an unbelievably entertaining match.
Way to throw salt in the wound there.
I've lost championships too. It's not fun, but sometimes there's redeeming factors.
I think the best part about that tournament is you're playing against so many great athletes, and of course you have the commentator, Karch Kry, who is a heck of an athlete, and I wish, you know, the outcome was different, that we would have won, but at the end of the day, I get to play with these girls on the USA level, so a win is a win in that category.
How much have you and Alicia Glass and Megan Hodge ever talked about that final?
I think we kind of laugh about it, because I always say, I only watch the first two sets, and then I turn it off, and then they say, well, we only watch the last three, and we don't even watch the first two. So we always laugh about it, but I think playing on the USA level, you know, you learn each other's tactics, you play hard and work hard, and we've all won gold medals together, so we're trying to get that next one in London.
Okay, so you guys are coming off a couple of great seasons, but in particular this year, you win Grand Prix. You go out and you could have won World Cup. It sets up in a very strange match against Japan, and we've talked about it on this show. It's a really bad situation for players.
Yes.
Coaches still get aggravated to lose, but it's a horrible situation for players. But talk about the maturation of that team and you inside of the system of Hugh McCutchen. What are some of the changes you've been forced to make and thought processes that he has you going through, maybe not necessarily physically, but some of the mental aspects of the game and teammates and the concept of the team?
I think the best concept that Hugh has provided for the team is that you train with a lot of veterans who've been through like Olympic Games, World Cups, and final championship games, and you learn from them. You learn to watch their hitting tactics. You learn to watch them defensively and how they talk to you on and off the court. And I think that helps a lot, because when you're in the game, there's so much going on, wearing on your shoulders. I missed my serve. Now what do I do? But you can always look to someone like Logan Tom and Heather that can tell you, hey, shake it off, next ball, don't worry about it. Whereas if this was a college game and you're the senior, everybody's looking at you and you don't know what's going on. But it's always good to have people with that caliber on the team.
When you came to the U.S. team, who was the player that you were most excited to play with?
I think all of them. I think I was more starstruck when I came to the gym. I didn't even know what Logan Tom looked like, because, you know, when you see her on the court when she's younger, you know, she had the short hair, long hair, and I remember watching her stretch, and I was like, who is that? And Megan Hodge was like, are you serious? That's Logan. And I was like, so, you know, the eyes get big, you know, like a deer in headlights. But just watching her and how she performs, you trying to be just like her.
I know you're impressing a lot of other teams out there when you're playing against national teams. You're doing some things that they look at you and just go, all right, we can't stop that. That's too high. She's hitting over the top of us. But I'm curious, of the other teams you've seen, the great athletes that are out there from an Italy, from a Russia, who has impressed you the most as far as opponents go?
Opponents go? I would say Takeshita has impressed me, being as short as she is.
The setter from Japan, 5'3",
yes.
But unbelievable.
Yes. Touching balls. I remember she blocked Mahdi straight down to steal the set, and I was just like, oh my goodness, you know, that's the kind of player you do not want to take advantage of. As well as Shayla. Everybody always wants to compare me to Shayla from Brazil, but she's a great opposite, and I don't really like being compared to someone like her, because she has so much experience, but it's nice. And I take it as a compliment at the same time, but she's a great athlete as well.
Yeah, she has longer arms. I don't know how it's possible, but Shayla has some of the longest arms I've ever seen on a volleyball player.
Yes, she does. As well as Gamova from Russia. Very tall athlete, but
yeah.
She can move, she can block, she can hit sharp angles, and knows where to place the ball really well.
Yeah, can you talk about your relationship with Rox, sporting wear and whatnot, and what you've got coming up with that, and not only that, but your involvement with them?
Rox, I got signed with Rox last year in September, and really I like Rox that there's so much color. I love color. I love seeing smiles and happy times, and they're in Florida, so that's the Sunshine State. But also they love to listen to my ideas, how I feel, and I already have two jerseys on. I'm wearing one right now, and the main jersey they have out is the Roximation jersey. And what Troy's told me, they've had 650 club teams that they're sponsoring right now. And to me, that's huge. And I'm looking forward to working with them, especially during the Olympic time. Hopefully we can make a huge comeback with some USA colors.
So here we are in San Antonio, your hometown. Destiny Hooker's home turf as far as volleyball goes. If people are going to go somewhere, people are going to go to a restaurant, have some nice meal, like an authentic experience. Where are we supposed to go?
Texas Land and Cattle.
Texas Land and Cattle. Is that nearby? Can I walk to that?
Actually, I don't know if it's nearby here because I live off Waltham, so it's kind of around in that area. But
okay.
There's a steakhouse, Steakhouse Morton's off of Crockett Street.
Okay.
So you can try that if you're into steak, that is.
Okay, sure. No problem. I'll try and get somebody else to pay, but I'm into steak.
You're paying. That's my.
I'm buying.
That's my moderately priced.
I don't think that's moderately priced.
Oh, come on.
What a shock, Barney.
Oh, Geeter. If you'd have showed up, I'd have bought you dinner just for showing up.
From the peanut gallery. Geeter, go ahead and weigh in with Destiny Hooker here.
Listen, Destiny and I have a Skype relationship from her days back in Texas. I used to speak to the team before matches. She was one of my all-time
favorite college players. Speeches. I mean, what did that hold any meaning for you?
There.
Were you more motivated? Were you less motivated? Were you like, who is this goon
actually,
coming
Geeter's
in here?
Conversations really calmed me down because when you're in your locker room, you already have a lot of nerves going. He'll give you a story that makes you laugh and just forget about all your stresses before entering your match. So, yes, he has really helped me.
Look at that. Look what you've done, Geeter.
Hey, Destiny, you know what I tell Barnett now? Suck on that one, buddy. Do you hear that? The greatest player, Destiny Hooker, just pumped me up and shot you down.
Oh, my goodness. All right, Destiny, I want to talk to you about your professional career because last season, I want you to cover this for our listeners. Last season, you're over in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
And tell me, this is what I understand the situation to be. You have a knee injury, knee issue. They send you to the doctor. The doctor tells you something's wrong. You can play, you can't play. They want you to continue playing. They ask the doctor to change the diagnosis or give you misinformation as to your health so that you would play in the playoffs. And risk further damage? Is that accurate? And did you find out about it and there was a dispute and you end up coming home and there was a whole bunch of stuff that went down? Clarify the situation for us and our listeners.
The situation is this. I had received an email from the team's manager, Dixie, telling me it's only 15 more days, you know, just push through it. He knew I was injured. He heard from my doctor in the U.S. that, you know, she has a tear. But I think their main focus was the Champions League and was to, you know, win it. You know, that's anyone's goal once you make it that far. But at the same time, if you have a player that is injured, to listen to their needs. So I came back to San Antonio and talked to my doctor, and he verified that, yes, you have a tear in your lateral. You might be out for 8 weeks. You can do surgery right away. Got it done, and I'm here now.
So the knee feels good, going the right direction. Professional league this year. Increased to it, very nice. So you're up to like 12-7. That's a good height.
I wish.
So this season, you're headed off to Brazil. You've been down to Brazil, won a match, came back, and right after this event, you're going back?
Yes. I go back to Brazil January 3rd.
Okay.
I was just going to ask, you know, being back at this event and talking with, you know, future Olympians and future girls, you know, teammates, any piece of advice that you would give them now in this environment?
I think what I had to learn in college, you know, after you play your last senior match, you think that's the end of it, you know, what am I going to do next? But always know you have enough time to make that decision and make sure when you make the decision is what you want to do. Make sure you know the coaches that you're going to. Make sure you know the agent. You trust the agent. Make sure you trust the coaches as well as your teammates because it's a cutthroat business in the pros overseas, and people don't realize that. And it's not the NBA. It's not the WNBA. That's for sure. But just to know that when you're overseas, to love what you're doing.
So, Destiny, yesterday said hi to you, met Ricky. Is that your dad?
Yes.
Can you talk about his hat yesterday, please?
Oh, dear. my dad has a very nice dress hat that he loves. He's been wearing it since I was in high school and yet to give it away. So whenever he can, he's going to wear it. Doesn't matter. He couldn't find it today. I'm glad. I had to tell him to put it.
Did you hide it?
I didn't hide it. My mom did, but I told him to put on the
He's got the baseball hat on today.
Yes, more appropriate, definitely.
Well, Destiny, we wish you the best of luck in the upcoming season. And, of course, you guys have a great road going to Grand Prix, going to the Olympic Games next year. I'll see you there. It should be fantastic. I think there's exciting stuff going on with your team. You guys are going the right direction. You're a big part of that.
Thank you very much. Looking forward to it.
Thanks for spending the time with us, sitting down for a little bit. Really appreciate it. Pleasure. All right, Destiny Hooker, opposite hitter from the U.S. Women's National Team. Hey, if you come to this convention, this is the kind of people, the caliber of people you can meet when you come here to this event. I mean, there is everybody here. Incredible college players, incredible national team players. Volleyball Magazine is here. All the sponsors. We're talking about Rocks, Destiny Hooker's big sponsor. All kinds of other volleyball-related companies are here. There's clinics going on. If you're a coach out there listening to this program, you should be here listening to this program. You shouldn't be sitting at home. You need to be here learning.
Yeah, you know, we've even seen young young up-and-coming coaches, coaches that want to get into the mix. A guy that went to your camp, Adam Rollman, I saw him, no joke, I saw him in the halls. He's got a semester left at Nebraska, in the halls.
Looking for a job.
Yeah, looking for a job. He was talking with Mary Wise. Nobody else in the hallway. Empty hallway. Adam Rollman, Mary Wise, talking. You know, I thought, you know what? That's a pretty cool picture right there.
There were three people there. Adam Rollman, his white shirt, and Mary Wise.
Exactly. But, you know, it's
a neat environment. Sounds to me like there's a lot of potential sponsors for the Net Live out there.
There are, and if we had somebody like Chris McGee to really schmooze everybody who knew everybody from way back and could talk to Brian Lewis about how awesome he used to be and how great he is and how his company ought to sponsor our program, then that would probably happen. But since
That's
I've never met
point.
Brian Lewis before, and I had to just chat him up yesterday a little bit, not going to quite get to that point, maybe.
Did you hear that, Geeter? Barnett
great
is
point.
Bitter about having to meet people on his own. He'll do it no problem. When other people
now, hang on.
Introduce them.
Hang on, you two, because listen, I had secured a sponsorship. I had secured a sponsorship, sold it, done. Bring It Promotions, going to bring you Geeter here at the San Antonio Convention, was ponying up the money, and Geeter said no. Tim Kelly, owner, Bring It Productions, super agent extraordinaire, Nicaraguan resident, and sometimes scary individual walking down a train platform. What do you have to say about McGee's absence?
I'm heartbroken. I don't even know if I'm going to be able to do the show.
Hear that, McGee?
Well, Tim.
You have broken the heart of Tim Kelly.
Tim, you broke mine back in 93. You resurrected it in Columbia back in 95. And I apologize that I broke your heart. And your
Hang
email
on.
Was funny that you couldn't believe I actually had to work. And I shot down your generous, generous offer. But, press conference was yesterday. And for my company, that was kind of a big day. And, you know, we do have a Kobe interview today at 2:30, a one-on-one opportunity, okay, which is once a year. And, you know, I can't pass that stuff up. And I know deep down inside you understand that.
I do, brother.
We just hit stop on the stopwatch of how long Geeter to mention 93. The answer is 35 minutes, 42 seconds,
yep,
if you're counting at home.
Now Barnett,
it's not appropriate.
Now Barnett can talk about flag football, so we're really
just
done.
Wait till we get to motocross. We may not even have time for it on this program today.
Hey, listen, this program, guys, has done wonders for me in terms of therapy. I mean, it was this show that made me realize that UCLA was just a much better team than us in 93. For about 13 years, I thought we blew that match until I realized that they had five or six Olympians on that team, plus Tim Kelly, they were just better.
I just want to say I'm proud of you, brother. I love what you're doing out there. I had a good chat with Goose the other night in the suite, and he was running, giving me a little bit more of a rundown on what you got going on these days, and I think it's great.
I'm not going to let down Ann anymore.
Hey, Geeter, I don't know if you heard me. In all seriousness, I will second that motion. I'm glad you're interviewing Kobe instead of being here. But let's get around to Tim Kelly here. He's been running tours. I've been talking to coaches who've been on your tours, all kinds of people, whether we're talking about Reed from Cincinnati or talking about Molly from Houston, all kinds of stuff going on. What do you have upcoming?
We got a lot of good stuff coming up. You know, we're going over to Europe on – well, I'm flying over Christmas Day. Everyone else is coming the next day. We got Russ Rose running our first ever coaches roundtable in Europe. Mike Seeley actually signed up for it, and he's coming as a guest. So we're really excited to see him in the finals now, and that's going to be a good thing. But as I told Barney before, I wanted to come on and talk a little about the January tour.
Talk to us about just what the idea of the January tour is, and you know how people get involved, and kind of, you know, what to expect.
Okay, so this is our annual exposure tour. I think I called in, my first ever call-in was from the January tour. I called in from Prague last year. We take over anywhere from 30 to 40 girls. Most of them are recent grads. They want to play pro, and they're, you know, kids that either need to kind of prove themselves or prove to themselves that they really want this. So this year we're starting in Bologna, Italy, and we're going to make our way up to Vienna, Austria. And we got coaches flying in from all over Europe to check them out. We got a lot of teams kind of waiting to see who's there and can come get started for the second half. Right now there's 35 girls signed up. The reason I wanted to get on here and do a little self-plug is that we're really short on middles and outsides. So any of the coaches out there listening or players out there listening, if you have graduated middles or outsides that want to give it a shot or learn more about playing in Europe, we'd love to have them.
Tim, talk about the relationship with the NCAA and what you're doing. Are kids able to sign up for your tour, pay to go on your tour, before they've graduated? Is that coming into conflict with the NCAA at all?
That's actually a wonderful question. When your eligibility is done, there's no more rules at all. But, you know, during this process, let's say all the seniors during the year, some of the better players that we know we have offers in Korea and Russia and Puerto Rico, we're talking to them during the season. And a lot of coaches don't know that that is legal. You know, I am technically an agent, and that's frowned upon. You know, you don't want your undergrads, while they have eligibility, talking with an agent. But it's not illegal to talk. It's just illegal to commit to anything or accept any gifts. And, you know, one of the things that we've been all about the last couple of years is education. And if we can't talk to the girls during the season, then we've got to talk to them the day after their last match. And it's a pressure cooker then. You know, we got a couple offers, and the teams wanted to sign right away, and they don't know anything. So players that are done with their eligibility can pay to go on the tour. They can talk to us. They can ask us questions, everything. And all of that stuff still applies, even if you haven't graduated. It doesn't matter.
Tim, you know, I've heard many, many great stories about how invaluable this experience is. Not just the play, but the experiences of taking teams over. And I'm sure you're well aware there's upcoming legislation that's proposed by the NCAA that takes some of that away, or that opportunity away. Your feelings and maybe how you move forward with that.
Well, yeah, this has been popping up since 2007. Different parts of the NCAA have come out and tried to ban foreign tours. There's been a backlash every time. You know, BYU and the Ivy League schools, that's part of their core curriculum. And so many schools have been on tour that people are really in support of it. This is the first time where the actual board of directors, as I understand it, we've got an NCAA board of directors that's 18 people. They're all presidents of various universities, and they're kind of handing down some unilateral mandates. They met in August, and one of the things they wanted to do was cancel foreign tours. They just had another meeting in December on December 2nd, and they put out a memo making it very clear that during their voting in January, they're going to try to ban foreign tours. So all those coaches that want to go, that know what this is about, we're suggesting that you get contracts signed so that at least there's a chance to go in 2012 and hopefully 2013. Beyond that, we just really have no idea what's going on. And I hope that the coaching world in basketball, volleyball, and soccer, which are the main teams that tour, that they're getting on their ADs, that they're getting on their presidents and telling them that they want to go. And it's also really important that students, you know, let people know, because the student advisory boards at a lot of these schools actually have some power. Many of us maybe don't know about this. And so if students say, hey, this is a, you know, something I want to be able to do, and let that known, maybe, you know, maybe they won't get banned. Maybe we'll buy a couple more years here.
Yeah, you know, this is one of those things, as you talked about, the NCAA coming down pretty just hard with some new things. And again, I think some of their answers to some bigger problems that have nothing to do with, you know, foreign tours necessarily. But, you know, the experience of it, and you said it, in some of these schools, in the Ivy League, BYU, is mandated. And what an opportunity it is to go overseas and see how the rest of the world lives. I mean, sometimes I think we kind of pigeonhole us and think everything's just like America.
Well, sure. And then you've got the team bonding aspect and the fact that you're getting extra touches. You know, you get 10 extra training days before the trip, plus all the trainings and matches on the trip. It was interesting. Yesterday in the meeting, they had 17 people up on stage. The ABCA was, you know, congratulating past presidents or something. And I noticed 11 of the 17 people on the stage had been on tour with us. And I hope they all loved it. You know, the ones I know well, I know they did. And so I'm thinking the volleyball leadership is probably going to get even more behind this. And the problem is it's more of a basketball problem. You know, the basketball teams that go on tour
right.
are spending so much more than the volleyball teams, and the ADs just don't want to pay for that anymore.
Well, it seems like an artificial solution. I was having a conversation today with Kathy and DeBoer of the UCA and a couple other people talking about the fact that these university presidents and athletic directors don't know how to cut off the basketball team or football team on their credit card. And they need all these blanket rules so they can point to the rules rather than having to make hard decisions on their own.
True. Absolutely true.
And you end up affecting things like the volleyball teams and people who are doing it on a budget and going and not spending a ton of money. And I talked to, you know, John Cook about his budget versus the women's basketball budget, and it's just insanely different. And John says, look, I wouldn't even know what to do if you gave me that amount of money. I don't know where it would go into my program. And look, you can find places to buy Xboxes and stuff, but really, you know, it's kind of crazy.
Hey, guys, I got to go. I just want to say goodbye, keep up the good work, and I'll see you guys later. Thanks for letting me hang out for a bit.
Say hi to Kobe.
All right. Hey, I wanted to ask you about kind of that knowledge level of the athletes, because you look up at the stage today, first, second, third team All-Americans, all there on the women's side of the game. Obviously, they could have careers overseas, every single one of them is at a decent level.
Absolutely.
And there's a whole bunch of athletes even well beyond that that could have good careers overseas.
Yes.
Where is the knowledge level of these athletes and of the coaches who maybe would be able to get the information to the athletes about opportunities like you provide and where you place women?
I think there is more information now, and people are doing a better job of being informed and informing their players, but I would still say it's extremely low. I've talked to four or five girls today just at the banquet and after, girls that I've been talking to their coaches, thinking that information is getting to the players, and they're completely clueless. And it's a shame, and I've talked about this with you before, I think, and that's one of the things I'd really like to do is find a way to get this information to the girls, not even during their senior year, but you know, in their sophomore and junior year, so that they're thinking about it, talking to other girls from their school that have played, talking to other friends that have been overseas, and able to make an informed decision shortly after finishing their eligibility, which is when their value is so high. You know, one of the interesting points is, and you understand this having played internationally, there is no person in the world that becomes free in December or January except an American NCAA athlete. Every single other team in the world is on the FIVB schedule, so they're all locked down from August to May. So if you're a girl graduating in December and you can go play somewhere in January, whether it's Europe or Asia or Puerto Rico, you're one of the top players in the world. I told Alex Jupiter and I was telling Tara Murray that this morning that she and Kanani and Alex Jupiter are the three best players in the world that are available right now. So if you've got a good job in Russia or a good job in Asia or a good job in Puerto Rico, you are going to get it, or you've got the best shot. Now, what happens if you don't take it then and you wait until the fall? You're right back in the cauldron with all the hundreds of, you know, thousands of all the players in the world that are starting over. So you've got a real supply-demand example where your value is at all-time high right when you graduate.
What is happening with Azerbaijan? Why is that the hotbed for women's volleyball?
The quick answer is oil money and mafia money. They just they got a ton of money. They're into it. And everyone's, for the most part, getting paid, and it is big money. And it's kind of the flash in the pan the last couple of years. We don't know if it'll, you know, keep going, but for right now, it's big money for everybody.
I had no mafia, Rosenthal, my entire career. We had the Italian mob all the way up to the beginning of my career. Gone. No mafia for 10 years. Volleyball stinks. Then all of a sudden, Russian mob comes back into the picture, and there go the dollars again. Just talk to Sullivan about this issue, too. Same deal. 10 years, zero money.
You know, TK, you talk about the education, and just from a coaching standpoint, you know, we had our first player go play overseas last year, and the truth of the matter was I had no idea what to even tell her, you know, what to even explain or what to expect or anything like that. And, you know, I think that's huge, is the education process and continuing that on and on, because it's not necessarily just the big schools. I mean, the mid-major programs, and, you know, it's awesome that I have had that experience. So,
well, no, and there's we get kids that come on the January tour and our August exposure tour that are D2, D3, NAIA. We get kids that aren't starting for their programs, and some of them end up being very good players. You know, the U.S. system is so specialized that sometimes a D1 All-American actually can't play internationally because of the rotation issues. So, and you can get a D2 kid that's, you know, hitting a 4 and a 2 and a 5 and back row and jump serving, and they're on a, you know, mid-level D2 team, but they can actually play the game. They're much more valuable to a European team than a D1 first-team All-American that can only hit or only pass.
Tim, give out your information before we let you go here, where people need to go to sign up, when the tour dates are again, so our listeners know.
Oh, yeah. The January tour this year runs January 9 to 19, so you're leaving the States on January 8th. It's all over our website, which is bringitusa.com. All you got to do is Google Bring It Promotions or Professional Volleyball or anything, and you'll find it right on there.
Sweet. Tim
Thanks
Kelly.
For having me, guys.
Thanks for coming in. Thanks for sitting in. Thanks for trying to sponsor.
Hey, the
Chris
offer's
McGee.
Still there. Anytime we can get McGee somewhere, if I'm going to be there, I'll pay his way.
Right on. Tim Kelly, Bring It Promotions. Go check it out, bringitpromotions.com. Place you can go get your athletes information about the international game and what's been going on. Tim Kelly's been at it forever. Absolutely forever.
He was like the first.
Yeah, there were a couple others around. It was a comical time when I came out in 97, but Tim's been the most sustained, and I think one of the more diligent as far as signing a number of athletes.
No, I mean, I think that's awesome, you know, and I'll be interested to see just with the growth of the sport here in the United States and more and more young women trying to go and play overseas, what that's going to bring over the next 5 to 10 years. I mean, I think right now as we talk to recruits, that's more and more of a future goal. And that's neat to see. You know, not just, hey, I want to win a national championship, but beyond that, I want to play professionally.
Hey, it's a big world of volleyball out there. Our athletes need more exposure. It definitely has to happen. The Net Live is trying to be part of that. We're glad you're listening. We're glad you're getting us on podcast. If you want to interact with us during the week, it is facebook.com/TheNetLive. We've got Dan Mickle walking by with a NetLive t-shirt on. We've got NetLive t-shirts available right here, $20. Remember, you're supporting the cause. Come on by and buy a t-shirt. Talk to Brandon Heger right here from Mississippi State. Support the cause. We're trying to promote you, your sport. Talk to us if you want to be on the program. More to come live here from convention in San Antonio. The Net Live, Barnett and Rosenthal sitting in. Definitely doing some kind of spinning away here, sitting in live at convention. San Antonio on the floor of the convention center. Semifinals are over. Illinois going to take on UCLA coming up on Saturday night here at the Alamo Dome, just a little ways down the road. Go down there and check it out. The finals are going to be some sort of game. It's going to be Battle of the Supermodels.
And we've brought in a professional to settle this debate.
Hambly versus Seeley. Can I get a show of handsome from Molly of Houston?
Like, I have to
talk
pick?
To me, Molly Alvey.
Have to pick.
Yeah. Molly Alvey, you were wearing, like, a red blouse, a red coat, and some sparkly stuff on your arm.
Blingy.
You got the bling going. So if anyone is qualified to pass a show of handsome on these two men. Yeah, so give us your show of handsome. I want to know who wins the walk-off and who wins the match.
You know what's interesting? They're both cleaned up a little bit, too. Hambly got a haircut. Nobody's mentioned that.
And Seeley got a serious haircut.
And Seeley got a serious haircut. Why do I have to pick? Couldn't I do like a West Coast vote and an East Coast vote?
Wait, I thought you were going a different direction with that why do I have to pick. It sounded like an Alvey sandwich right there for a second. But
she said, can I pick a West Coast and an East Coast? Well, that would be the final.
Listen, I want a show of handsome, most handsome, and then I want whose team wins.
Most handsome.
Oh, these are tough choices.
Okay, if we're going to use the word handsome, I'll go with Hambly.
Oh, I like it. Clean cut.
I see where she's going.
Clean
I mean,
cut.
The guy brings it.
Yeah. Okay.
So we could come up with another category for Seeley if we need a vote or something there.
She wants to vote for them both, basically.
What she wants to do is she wants to do a little more research. Yeah. That's what she wants. She wants research on the topic. In depth. Okay, who wins the match?
Who wins the match?
Based on what you saw, Illinois in a 5-set thriller against USC, comes back after losing set one and set four, and then you had on the other side a dominant performance from UCLA.
Yeah, very dominant. I mean, I think Illinois needs to be kicking on all cylinders, but I think it's going to be a good match there. I mean, if they can do that, Ward played some pretty good volleyball.
Yeah, Naperville North,
and
like
front,
to bring that
front
up
row
again.
And back row. I mean, if she can bring that again, all right. I like Illinois' odds. It'll be a good game. It's exciting.
So you're saying Illinois. So you're calling Illinois on both.
Hambly's the big winner.
Hambly is the big winner.
The big, big winner.
He is the big winner. All right, Molly Alvey, Houston, tell us about your program this past year. Talk about what you're doing to change that program in your first few seasons.
Gosh, you know, we're doing a lot to change it. I think
it's your third year?
Second year.
Second
year. Second
year.
It'll be 2 years in February since I've been at Houston. A lot of culture change. that's been our biggest obstacle. I guess obstacle challenge, not really sure, just teaching a group of players and a lot of new players each year coming in, trying to mix the two and teach what winning is about. So I think we got a good look at that this year. I mean, we had some great wins this year, great scheduling as far as who we had to face. I got my first All-American, Lucy Sharuk, was third team All-American this year. So I think
she's
a lot
taller than you, I noticed.
She is
there was a comedy moment. I was kind of off stage, but there was a comedy moment when you stood next to her, wasn't there?
Yeah. Oh, I got a text about 30 minutes before the banquet started that said, "Hey, coach, I hope you're wearing your really tall heels today." So I'm very happy for her. She deserved it, and she's been working extremely hard. So
we've talked to other coaches, new coaches, the new programs, and the feeling has been about 3 years. About the end of that third season was when you start to feel like it's your team. Do you feel like that's the timeline, or is it further, or are you already there?
I think 3 years minimum, and it just takes time. I mean, even with your staff, you get a new staff in, and they're learning you just the lingo, you know, and your verbiage that happens, and getting all of you all on the same page along with the team, and just being new, the transitions that happen, even kids in and out still in year two. The kids that we have come in and out because it is a new program and expectations change. And so 3 years, minimum. I think it takes a little bit of time.
People don't say you all down where you're from, though. You just dropped a you all on us. I think they shortened it a little bit.
I'm pretty sure they say y'all.
She's changing, too.
Yeah?
I've always
Molly, where are you from?
I'm from Kentucky. Louisville.
It didn't sound like Louisville.
Louisville, yeah.
It looks like Louisville in
I
red.
I could be the only Louisvillian, actually, that says you all.
Louisvillian? That sounds like a Whovillian.
Louisvillian.
Is there somebody that lives on a giant mountain outside town?
Yeah.
Talk about being here at convention. What are you looking for this year? What's your focus? Who do you want to talk to? Who do you want to hear from?
I don't know if who I want to talk to. That's a great question as far as, I think we have the pieces in play. How do they all come together? So I think just experience. People have kind of done the same things as far as taking their team. I hate saying the next level. It's like a bucket word. Hey, let's get to the next level. I think just for
meaningless phrase.
This team needs to go to the tournament. Match. Yeah, in the recruiting bed that we're in Texas, this team needs to go to the tournament, and they need to be going the second round. So how do we get there? Recruiting is going to continue to be a lot of it and how we sell ourselves. So image for us and changing the image and keep bettering the image of the University of Houston. So I think those that have done that with programs. Ann Cordes has always been a great mentor for me. I think she did a similar thing at St. Louis at building that program there. And with the ability
speaking
of Louisvillians. But, just the recruiting talent that she had in St. Louis and the draw there. I'm in a different situation here at Houston, just having so many kids around to recruit from, so we got to take advantage of that.
Talk about the success of the football team and how that affects you guys and just moving forward. And huge, huge year for them.
Huge.
Unfortunate, championship game, but talk about that.
Yeah, only unfortunate, I guess, for the – just the fact that that's kind of how the season ends, so that's the perception of it, or not ends, but hopefully, as a whole, everybody looks in and doesn't see that Houston football is just that conference championship game, and they've had an unbelievable season, highest ranking, I believe, number 6 in the country, swept Conference USA awards as far as the players, coach of the year, and just the, Kevin Sumlin's left us, but he's done a phenomenal job with that program, and just the face that he puts to it, I think the personality that he adds. It kind of puts a face to all of us and a personality to the athletic department. And, it's great for us as far as the image that I was talking about and developing recruiting and getting the right people to a program. I think it shows that we're a serious business there at Houston and taking the whole department to a new level.
All right. Give us your dinner party. Lots of dinners, lunches, whatever. Your dinner party. Well, whoever. Put 4 people in your dinner that you would like to have dinner with. Here.
Wait, we're already there.
No, so
besides
us. Then I'll
get one more?
More? Besides us. Just a dinner party. I mean, people that you would say, hey, I'd like to learn a little bit more. Doesn't matter. They're going to show up. You don't have to actually ask them. Dinner party.
So you two are in.
Is this the classic where you're supposed to say Abe Lincoln or something?
No, I think this will be good. It's Mike Seeley and Kevin Hambley.
Listen, man. Molly, this is not the Bachelorette, okay?
Sounds like I'm at the short end of that table.
She's setting up the Bachelorette for herself right there. Can I get a rose, please?
First to go, Rosenthal.
It's the one where they show your interview as though it's still during time, but you can already see the tears, like you've been crying. So if you really look closely, you know that you're actually the one who's out at the end of the program.
As they go to commercial break, you've already figured it out. Rosenthal's gone. Let's go get some ice cream.
All right, Molly, we'll put that dinner party together tonight as soon as this show is over in our trivia contest. It's
all right.
Game on.
Great. Thank you
for tonight.
So much.
Thanks for stopping by again. Always want to hear from you. Molly Alvey from Houston. Houston having another good season. Molly in her second season. I'm going to follow her through her third, fourth.
Her voice wasn't as raspy this year.
I disappointed. I like that. I know, are you sensitive about that at all?
Not at all.
The raspy voice?
No.
No way.
Yeah.
No
you
way.
You know what's funny is more people talk to me after the raspy voice than ever would have.
Really? They're digging it.
Like random people. Like
last year.
Well,
the,
that's a little scary.
The Kansas City weather affected her last year.
Oh, yeah.
It's got a bit dry.
Well, it didn't help we stayed up all night the last night either. That didn't help anybody. My voice.
That night too.
Jay Hostek looking for the up or down. Hey, Jay, I'm the emperor, you know, maybe. But we'll get. Are you coming for the contest? Okay, Jay Hostek is going to win the iPad. Molly, we'll see you in a little while. We'll see you for some beverages. All right, let's get a few more people on here. We're supposed to have Mike Seeley calling in. Let me get Ray Gooden right now. Give me Ray. Can you hang on for a couple minutes? This is great radio, by the way. This is how many people. If you come to conventions, this is what happens. You're sitting in one spot, and there's everybody in volleyball walking by.
It's like the All Star break.
We gotta get a man on here with a voice for radio. Reed Sunihara, come and have a seat. He's down here from Cincinnati. He's talking to Denise Corlett right now. I mean, how many more names can we drop here? Geeter needs to be here. He's the master name dropper. We're waiting on a call from Mike Seeley. Claims he will be calling us shortly on the bus on the way home. But sitting down with us now, the man from the Bearcats. Although he doesn't wear his Bearcats gear as much as everybody else wears their gear. I don't know. He's got on a nice golf shirt. Looks like silk. What are those? Satin pants? What do you got going there?
It's a little soft, I guess.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're a fine dresser, my man.
Well, thanks.
Reed Sunihara out of Cincy. We've talked to you on the program before. Talk about convention. What are you hoping to do here? You're replacing some of your staff? Is this the first time you'd find out?
No. I'm keeping my staff. You know, I like my staff, and, you know, they do a nice job for us.
Talk about your season this past year, Cincinnati. Up, down, as far as your expectations coming into the year?
You know, I thought we had a good year. It's not where we wanted to be. You know, we wanted to get to at least the Sweet 16 and even farther. And I thought we had a good chance. But, you know, for the most part, we played well and we beat some good teams. And we also, you know, played some bad volleyball too. So, you know, we need consistency. And if we can do that, then we should be fine.
Maybe touch upon the parity that you saw. It's been mentioned on this program probably more so than ever this year. Obviously, you guys playing in the Big East, and just talk about the parity that you saw personally.
Well, from the start of the season, I mean, you know, teams were beating up on each other, and I really thought it was anyone's game from the get-go. And, you know, the two best teams right now are playing, I think, and, you know, I'm sure other teams could have been there too, but it's the consistency of it, and, you know, like you said, it's the parity, so... You know, I thought this year, more so than any other year, anyone could have won.
What's your opinion on the foreigner situation? You ran into Florida State, 3-2, great match, ended your year. But, of course, a lot of foreigners there at Florida State. There's been a lot of talk about that. And there's been a lot of talk about that for a long time, the men's game,
right,
when players were coming along in the late 90s, and BYU comes to mind with a lot of foreign players. What's your feeling on the inclusion of foreign players in the NCAA system?
I think they should make it like any other... You know, like when a U.S. kid goes to play professionally overseas, I mean, they can only have two foreigners on the team. And, you know, I don't mind foreigners because I think it makes volleyball better.
It makes the tuition rolls a little better for the university sometimes,
right,
if you're not scholarship. Yeah.
Right. But, you know, I think there should be a cap or a limit on it. And if they can have a limit with two, then I think, you know, at least you know where they're coming from. But if you have... five or six, I don't think that's right.
Does Hawaii count as a foreigner?
Hawaii is a foreign place. I guess I'm a foreigner, right?
Well, talk about it from a recruiting perspective? I mean, do you have access? I know you know Tim Kelly. Do you have access to that kind of thing? Does that benefit you? Is that something you've pursued? Have you had a lot of foreign players on your squad before?
We've had a couple foreign players in our system a long time ago, but we haven't had any recently. The last time we had two were two kids from Holland that came, but they only stayed a quarter, and after the season was over, they left. So, you know, my experience, I don't have the connection some people do, and I think it's hard to recruit foreigners, first of all, and that's why we don't do it.
I think you make a good point that to Chris Poole's credit, to hold on to a team that includes foreigners, includes kids that have such a diverse experience from the normal set of kids.
Right.
I never really understood. I played with Peter Kodachi, who was from Hungary, in my time at Pepperdine, and I never understood why Peter, towards the end of the year, was a little bit of a dark cloud at times until I went to play overseas.
Right.
And now I've been in Belgium in a foreign place for 4.5 months, and I'm a little rough around the edges.
Right.
Well, I was rough around the edges anyway, but even worse, I look like a monster truck tire by that point. No, I look at that and go, okay, now I understood really what went into that. And I think Chris Poole, to his credit, held that group together, had some great wins in what is a diverse coaching experience.
Well, you know, in our league, there's Louisville. They used to have a lot more foreigners when Lennon was there. You know, St. John's has a bunch of foreigners. But it's hard. Like, you know, like you said, we don't understand that until you go somewhere to live for a whole year. But, you know, the girls that we had, they missed home, and it was just a foreign country to them, and which it was. And, you know, they just wanted to go back.
Yeah.
Like a kid being homesick.
I'm sitting in Belgium going, why would you ever want to live here?
Right.
But if that's where you grew up, you'd want to live there.
Exactly. But it makes you appreciate where you come from a lot more.
That's a great point. Of all the traveling I did with the U.S. national team, all the places I ever saw, some are fantastic, some weren't so great.
And
it made me really
memories,
appreciate
it.
Oh, it is an education that I hope more kids go out and seek. You know, on the female side of the game, there's so much opportunity here in the States.
Right.
But if you get out in the world, there's equal opportunity for men and women throughout the world game. And I really hope kids seek that out, because I did. I really appreciated being home and what I have here and the opportunities that are available here outside of even the volleyball universe.
Right.
And I think that would be so important for kids, volleyball athletes, but also anybody to get out there in the world and see what it's like. You don't like it here. You think it sucks in the United States? Boy, go to some of these other places in the world and really find out what people are struggling with, whether it's Poland coming out of communism or some of the socio issues that are there in Italy as far as climbing and see the inequities. And, you know, that's an education you couldn't buy.
Well, I mean, you know, when you're younger, you take things for granted. And to go through something like that and gain the experience, I think it's a life-lasting experience that, you know, you can hold on to and make sure you appreciate what you have.
Reed, I'm going to have to push you aside for another UCLA alumni, a guy who has a little important thing going on. You might know him. A gentleman named Mike.
Yeah.
I don't know if you'll recognize him this weekend. You may have seen him looking a little bit different this past year.
Yeah, I couldn't recognize him with the short hair, you know. But he looked like Greystoke, man.
One last question. You going to apply for the UCLA men's job?
No.
You're out.
I'm out.
You're off
I'm
the
out.
Short list. All right,
all
you
right.
heard it here. Reed Sunihara off the short list. Hey, thanks for sitting in with us. Always a pleasure.
Thanks, you guys.
All right.
Good to be here.
Good to talk to you.
Thanks, Kevin.
Listen, no breaks at all in this show. We are live at convention.
COY coming up.
COY.
Coach of the year.
Coach of the year. Listen, we're not taking a break, but I want you to know that convention is a place you need to be. And if you're here now, you need to sign up for our trivia contest coming up here in about an hour and a half time. Going to be right here at our table, the Mizuno NetLive Volleyball Magazine Trivia Shootout. If you win it, you're going to take home an iPad too. Right now, today, we're not mailing it to you. We're not promising it to you, not delivering. We're not sending you an empty box. You get the thing at the conclusion. We've got it here. Don't try and steal it from underneath the table next to me. You're going to get it at the end of this competition. Answer some trivia right, and you're going to be there. I want to welcome into the program a man who I'm happy joined us, and I'm sorry I left him on the hold for 1 minute and 48 seconds. My former teammate, a man that even back at my time playing with him back in 1998-99, you could tell he thought about the game in a different way, and the way he thinks about the game today is obviously successful. He's had an unbelievable season and a great run all the way to the final match. Welcome to the NetLive once again, Mike Seely. Seal.
Hello.
Thank you for joining us. You are the Coach of the Year. How much of a surprise to you personally in your second season was that award?
Very much so, considering I didn't think I was eligible. I thought that you had to be the regional coach of the year. You know, I'm not going to lie. It was something early in the season when things were going really, really well. I thought, wow, that'd be kind of a cool honor. And then our season kind of turned south. And it was like, okay, it's not going to happen, not a big deal. And it wasn't like I was losing sleep over it. And as soon as I kind of detached from even thinking about it, then they call me and drop the bomb, and it's been pretty surreal. But I do believe what I said at the banquet. It's kind of silly to stand up in front of people and that get singled out as the coach of the year, because I know that we all go through the same trials and tribulations about, you know, a tough season and battling and great wins and tough losses, and we're all fighting the same war. It just seems silly to pull one person out and honor them.
Steely Rosenthal here. Talk to us about the match last night. I mean, obviously a great, great performance by you guys, but, you know, your thoughts, and then we'll get into kind of thoughts coming up for Saturday.
You know, I was worried going into it because they run a couple plays with their middles that we don't see very often. So if they pass the ball well and have access to set the middle all the time, it could have been a much different story. But we served pretty tough and took the middles out of it. I mean, they both hit for a good percentage, but they just couldn't set them as often as they'd like to. And both those outside hitters, you know, have a ton of experience. They're very good with their shots. So I was afraid that any of the shifts we were going to make defensively, that some roll shot somewhere was going to be open. And that was a big concern.
Hey, Mike, we just talked to Reed Sunihara about foreigners in the league. We've talked to a couple other folks about the opportunities that are out there for a lot of the women and also men in the international game today. How does your professional experience and the years you spent overseas inform you as a coach?
Well, it's just a different style of play. You know, for so long, there was just the American way of playing. And unfortunately, we don't want to get political here, but a lot of times we think, well, you know, America's the best. We're the only way. It's our way or the highway. There's a lot of different little nuances that other people do differently that you can incorporate into your game style of play. So I thought it, you know, opened up a lot of avenues. Granted, you know, I worked for some of the best coaches that the college game has ever known, Al Skates, Andy Benikowski, Dave Shoji, but I learned a ton of stuff from a lot of the random little coaches in small towns overseas.
Hey, I don't think here anybody on the list has less than 1,000 wins.
Yeah, it's true.
Some good
and
people.
You know, I was on the bench for every one of those 1,000 wins, right?
So that means
I was there when Skates got 1,000. I was a volunteer assistant coach. When Andy got his 1,000, I was an assistant coach, and when Dave got his, I was an associate head coach. So I was literally at the match for all three of them.
Wow! So Tri-Bond, Mike Seeley. That's the answer.
We're going to take it one more because the next coach to do it was Russ Rose, and he did it beating Hawaii in the Final Four. So I was there for Russ's as well. That should be a trivia question.
Steely, I'm going to have to start scheduling you guys a lot next year.
If you need 1,000, just definitely get me on the schedule. I'll be happy to be there.
All right, Mike, talk about preparing your team for this match for Saturday coming up. We know you just came from practice and appreciate the time you're spending with us. Talk about preparations for that following last night's performance.
Yeah, you know, it's... You know, all year long, I was looking for that marquee, amazing team. I thought a lot of teams were very, very physical, but maybe had some ball control issues. I thought some teams were great ball control, but didn't have the physicality. It just didn't seem like there was that one team out there that had both. And then, unfortunately, I saw Illinois play last night. So that's the biggest, smartest dragon out there that we got to try to go slay. They don't have a ton of weaknesses.
Rosenthal says, make sure you block the line on their left side hitters.
I don't know if you
know. Except they can go hard Yankee crack 5 foot line cross court as well.
Yeah, Barnett was going crazy up in the booth because Colleen Ward, who is his new favorite player, because
yes.
They went to the same high school.
Yes,
was crushing right. Balls hard angle, and it didn't matter. He was just going nutso.
Yeah, she's got a ton of range, and she's very cagey, very good. Got a very true arm. Can hit the whole fan, can hit all the shots she needs to hit. It'll definitely be a challenge.
Well, Mike, I have divided loyalties coming up in this match, but it sure would be cool to see you win a national championship. It's been a pleasure to watch your success over the last year or so. And one last question before you go. Why did you cut the hair?
Because we had lost 3 of our last 5 games, and we were in an absolute slump, and that was the slump buster I came up with. Just had to mix
it up.
That's
the first push of the year. Seriously, I mean,
that kind of out-of-the-box thinking.
You talk about X's, yeah. No. It's cutting
your hair. No.
And I'll tell you, he knew that only because of our season in Belgium. That's what he knew.
Same exact thing happened. If we had lost more than 3-5, I would have had Barnett go buy the coloring off the shelf in the supermarket and dye my hair like he did back in 98. That would have been the next step.
We did the Belgian flag. One guy gold, one guy red.
Except you did it twice, then my hair started falling out, and then we had to buzz it. So that's a story for another time.
Mike Steele, we won't delay you with meaningless stories from 12 years ago because you are relevant now as the coach of UCLA, and we wish you the best in the finals tomorrow night. Thanks for joining us.
All right. Catch you later.
Mike Steele, UCLA Bruins, right out of practice, sitting in with us for just a little bit. It's fantastic. Hey, we're going to take about 15 seconds here, switch the seats. Next up, we're going to add a little color to the proceedings here. We've had people dressed in red, and this man is dressed in red.
It looks good.
Ray Gooden is going to sit down with us from Northern Illinois. So hang on to your hats. 15 seconds. We will be right back. Welcome back in the Net Live here on the VolleyballNetwork.com. We appreciate you tuning in. Brandon Rosenthal, 10 bonus points. If you can tell me who that group is that did that song we were just playing.
I have no idea, but DJ Roche would be pumped about the muff job right there.
Hey, listen, buddy. I don't want to hear it about doing 25 things to keep this show on the air. Hey, email us, thenetlive@gmail.com. If you want to talk to us during the week, facebook.com/thenetlive. We hope you're getting this via podcast. I know a lot of people do. It was All Saints, by the way, Brandon Rosenthal, a bunch of hot British broads. I see Ray Gooden over here nodding his head. He knows what's going on, All Saints. Like me some All Saints. That was when I was playing in Europe, and I had to watch music videos all day long because MTV was the only thing that had any English. Other than that, I was stuck with Dutch and 55 vowels in one word. You know, they take words and combine them, and they throw like three A's at you. I don't even know what to do with that. It's worse than Hawaiian.
Let's get back to the reason why we're here.
Let's bring it back to the Midwest.
I'm telling you what, if you have never gone to a clinic where this guy is teaching, you need to get there. Go to his camp, go to a clinic where he's teaching. This guy pours his heart and soul into it. I love it. That's where I first saw him, first met him. He was presenting with Russ Rose, and man, it was like two for one. It was like
Russ Rose was presenting with him.
Yeah. It was like a volleyball clinic and a comedy act all rolled up in one.
Welcome to the show, Ray Gooden from Northern Illinois. Huskies, anything with the Huskies, I'm down.
What's up, fellas? How you doing?
Look at this. He brought his radio voice, too.
He did. He dropped it down. He went boys to men on us.
Well, let's start there. Then you're going boys to men on him right away. We were making jokes earlier about going a little, I am black and you are white. You are blind as a bat, and I have sight.
Oh, God.
So, Ray, talk to me about getting the minority community involved with volleyball. There's quite a few initiatives out there, and trying to bridge that gap to this sport.
You know, first of all, thanks you guys for having me on. This is I check you guys out as much as I can on Mondays. It's been good, and it's been a really positive thing to continue to see more. You know, not only coaches, but more minority coaches in here, you know, see familiar faces, but the faces continue to grow and see new faces every single year. It's been great with the initiatives from the AVCA, with scholarship programs to work on those types of things. I'm just looking forward to when we can get, you know, more African-American males coaching as well. But each step that's been taken, it's been a really positive step.
talk about your season. A great season, not only for you, but for your conference and what that meant going into the tournament.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it was awesome. Everything. Last year we had a really positive season. We had 27 wins, you know, did some real nice things. Lost to Ohio University in our conference championship. Came out a little short as far as getting that large bid. Knew that we had a pretty big core coming back. When we had to make some changes, and we did a lot of things to work on it to put ourselves hopefully in a spot to where it was going to be hard for people to say no, you can't, you won't be able to be a part of the next phase. Had a schedule a little bit tougher. We were able to to get some really nice wins against some quality teams. Did well in our conference to win the regular season, and came up a little short again in the conference tournament. But our body of work was good enough in the minds of the selection committee to allow us to play to be one of the teams qualified for the NCAA tournament, which was a blast. Not only our team was able to do it, we had four teams from the Mid-American Conference, and so all that stuff has just been really good. But it's the only reason why it's so good is because our kids are great. Really fortunate to have the 17 that we had. Staff's been great, and it's just nice to be a part of it.
Ray, have you found yourself in the role of mediator between your married assistant coaches?
No, man. I mean, those guys work really well together. I think that, they have their, their yin and yang. They do it. They've got to put up with me. But I think they do a real good job. And if they ever do have an argument, I just kind of stay away. But it's pretty rare.
Talk about that putting up with you. What do you think are the challenges? If you're an assistant coach going to work in the Ray Gooden system, what is the real challenge you're facing?
I don't even know. I mean, I know I talk too fast sometimes. I know I get a little crazy sometimes. I know I get in their way during a match because my butt's standing up all the time during a match. But I hope people have fun. The people we've had before have always had a real positive experience, and they've moved on to really, to solid jobs and great careers. So if they're okay with that and putting in some time, I think it's a pretty good experience.
So many people, when they think of fantastic youth volleyball, California comes to mind all the time, particularly Southern California. But Illinois is an incredible place for both men and women. You think about Olympians, Sean Rooney, gold medalist, Tom Hawk, gold medalist, myself, non-medalist, coming out of Illinois, but having played on the national team level. And then you look down the talent that was just in the gym or just in the banquet hall right before we came down here to convention. Talk about a Kelly Murphy. We talk about a Colleen Ward, a couple others I can't think of. They're all coming out of Illinois. Michelle Barch, all out of that Illinois area. Talk about recruiting and trying to get those athletes, if you're talking about a Kelly Murphy, to stay home, stay around the area.
I mean, I think volleyball in Illinois is legit. I mean, I'm fortunate. Again, same thing coming from Illinois. I'm from Evanston. And when I started playing, it was the year or two before we had state sanctioned volleyball on the boys' side. So we won the mythical
1991 is the year that it actually was sanctioned.
Right on. So we won it in 1989 and 1990. And then all of a sudden, all the Westburg got, like you guys had it, picked it up and started dominating. But it was
true
great.
That.
But we had, I mean, I played with great players. I played with Dave, going back in the day, but like guys like Dave Muir, who played at Penn State, was an All-American,
That's a name people remember. Mark Roble was a powerhouse when I was in high school.
Yeah,
his sister Jenna was better.
Exactly, And those guys were right. They're right after me when I played at Ohio State, and on the girls' side, I mean, there have been so many names of people that have played, going back from so long ago, Bremner and, Zamaitis, and you can just keep going.
Terry Zamaitis,
right now.
Julie Bremner.
Right on.
Did you play with Tom Hawk?
I did. I was my third or fourth year when Tom came in as a freshman. We played in some grass tournaments, like we do up there in the Midwest, right before then. And it was cool. He's tall, kind of cocky, stringy guy from Park Ridge. But he developed, man, into one of the best middle blockers I've ever seen. And a really good guy. So it was cool. It's cool to interact with him still and see him from time to time doing things.
How do you feel about him using The Ohio State University as a junior college?
You know what? Look, I know that's a touchy subject for a lot of folks, so I'm going to kind of stay away. I'm just happy for him now. I think it worked out well for everybody.
Hey, you touched on it just for a second. Talk about the volleyball culture and some of the – because I missed out on it. I came to volleyball late in my senior year, and then boom, I was gone into California. And even when I'm at events like this, I wish that I had been a part of the community growing up as a youth. I think it would have made me a better teammate in college, would have made me a better pro, would have increased not only my technical ability, but just my knowledge of the community. Talk about some of those summer events that go on, some of the big things that are out there for what is a great time to be in the Midwest, because right now is not a great time to be in the Midwest.
Right. I mean,
but
I think
summertime is fantastic.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, hanging out in Chicago in the summertime is great. The volleyball culture in Chicago is tremendous. And way back when I played, again, in the mid-'80s, there weren't a lot of boys teams around, so we were playing against men. You know, our state games, the Prairie State games, we were always interacting with the adults, and the adults showed us what to do. You know, I mean, part of it was the volleyball, part of it was the social aspect of it, and how you combined all those things into one, and you didn't have to be extreme in any one thing, you just had to be passionate about it. And I think it helped us, you know, moving forward. When we went to our universities and played there, had a chance to come back afterward. But there's so many different ways you can play the game. You can play it sixes indoor. Back in the day, we played doubles indoor. We played triples indoor, played triples on the grass. People played out in the sand. There's so many different ways you can do it. And I think that was what made it fun. And it wasn't always about, hey, you've got to pay this person to show me how to do it. Hey, we're just going to go out there and set up a net and play ball for an hour, you know, and four people was good enough. You didn't worry about having 16 courts or 20 courts. You needed four people in a net and go play for, you know, each game you played for was for a pop, and then you go hang out afterward. And then,
he just said pop.
I did.
I say pop, I get made fun of too.
He's going to start talking about Portillo's next.
Ooh, Portillo's.
Oh, Portillo's.
Sweet, man. Yeah. Some Chicago stuffed pizza. We're good.
I was just so, yeah. Okay, so give me your favorite deep dish place. I sent these guys to Connie's.
Connie's is good. We're up in Evanston, there was a place called Carmen's. The family friends we knew, they had great stuff. But there's also a Giordano's. It's kind of like Chicago. It's either you're a Tribune reader or a Sun-Times reader.
Right.
Either a Sox fan or a Cubs fan. It's
right.
Kind of like no in between. So
the Bears is the only unifying force.
And the Blackhawks. You know, so that's the only thing. You know, so for us, we went to Carmen's all the time. Then later on, you know, Giordano's is our place out there now in DeKalb. It's great.
You can hear the passion. He starts speeding up. Starts going fast.
Sorry.
I'm telling you, go to a clinic and you have to get an interpreter.
All right, Ray Gooden, we got Nina Matthews coming up next.
Cool, man. You guys, I appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me on.
Appreciate you sitting down talking Northern Illinois. Have a good season next year as well.
Thank you. Take care.
Tear it up. All right, talking with Ray Gooden now. We're going to bring on somebody who had an unbelievable season.
Thank you.
I was sitting there listening to the match play-by-play on my phone because I was not in front of a television set. On my phone, play-by-play, shouting at my phone, why did you get aced again? I can't believe this is happening.
I can't believe you just did all that and she can't hear you. She didn't have the headphones on you.
Now she can hear me.
I can hear you. Hi, Kevin.
You had a fantastic season, Nina Matthews. Now, he keeps saying Mathis. Matthews? I've always said Matthews.
Matthews.
I-E-S. Thank you. You said Mathis twice. Yeah, and you even went to school there. Said hi to Nina. Maybe you're too scared, too intimidated to talk to her because she had more game than you.
That's for sure.
So, Nina, sure. I got to ask you that question that I threw out of the All-American banquet.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's you and Tim. You and Tim Jensen against Marcio.
And Kim
and
Hill.
And Kim Hill.
We get crushed.
The All-American.
Crushed.
Well, because of Tim, though.
Okay, Kevin. I'm almost 59 years old.
Okay.
I got one pin that doesn't work. I can hop on one knee. I think we'd get killed. We might, you know, if I get to serve first, I got points. And
who
I
are you serving?
See, I need Kim and Tim and me and Marcia. That would be a better. That would be a good.
Well,
battle.
We know that's just a straight crush down. No, we appreciate you sitting down with us here. You're actually doing some teaching. On the beach side of things.
Yeah.
Because you're one of those coaches that really couldn't cover both and really educate people on both. Tell our listeners what you're doing here as far as the education side on the beach goes.
Well, the NC2A is starting a women's sand. We're calling it sand, Kevin, not beach, because everyone doesn't have beaches. Sand.
Yes. We could call it NCAA bars in the Midwest is what you could call it.
Okay, well, sand volleyball. And right now we have 15 teams that are in for the 2012 season. So that is definitely happening and our schedule will start. We'll start playing the first week of March and go until the last week of April. So it's really exciting. And so I came and Marcio Ticoli, my assistant coach, and I, we're doing a few sand clinics to just like try to get for coaches coaching teams, you know, to sort of get them and, you know, maybe give them a few tips or get people a little confidence to get something rolling.
How much upheaval do you think there's going to be to that sand process moving forward, given what's going on with the NCAA and the finances right now, talking about stipends, talking about pay for play and redistributing some of the funds?
I think that the sand proposals are all in, you know, as far as what is expected. I mean, it's basically, I don't know that it at the beginning has to be a huge cost, if teams are, there's a lot of sports that are still not compliant with Title IX or have to get into compliance, or maybe they're sponsoring sports that are like falling out, and they're having to, like women's rugby, you know, I mean, maybe they have to sponsor another sport. Why not fan volleyball? So right now we're one of the emerging sports. We have 10 years to get 40 teams. I mean, come on. Seriously.
You'll do that in three.
I mean, seriously. Yeah. We have 15 now, and I think a lot of people are watching, kind of say, what's it going to look like? What's the format? How's it going to work? I think for an athlete, as just a pure athlete, I think it's fantastic. I mean, I'd
love to play both.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I would have loved to gone to school that, you know, that gave me an opportunity to play both. I think there's also some kids that are starting to train and say, hey, maybe I could just play Sam. Maybe I'm not the 6'4 outside here. Maybe I'm a 5'10", 5'11", great ball control player, really good, you know, strong kid. Maybe I can't get a scholarship to where I want to go, but maybe I can go where I want to go and play Sam. You know, so it's about matching a school with an opportunity that maybe you have, maybe you don't have. You know, I don't know. It's going to be very interesting to see where it all goes.
How much is a school looking at in cost to develop a sand court? Obviously, you have the sands of Zuma Beach,
yeah.
But a lot of other places are going to have to construct facilities.
You know, I heard some people today saying that there was a you know, it could be from, you know, $300,000 to put in a premium, you know, 3-4 court facility if you didn't have anything. If you have a tennis court or grass courts or some kind of an area that already is there, I think it could be up to like $30,000. I think you could go, I don't say low budge, high budge, but I think you can spend as little or as much money as the area allowed. You know, if you're having to rent a space and build a facility, obviously it's going to cost you a lot of money.
Switching gears, as you're going to become accustomed
right.
to very quickly.
That's
here,
okay.
All year is, talk about your season. I mean, a magical season. You know, I've been a part of Pepperdine since 1994, and, you know,
still didn't know how to pronounce her name.
Stop. She definitely intimidated us because we weren't allowed to date her players.
That's really smart.
Yes.
No, I don't.
Do
think
I owe a fine for that? Sorry.
But, you know, talk about your season and just take us back. Not to replay the tough loss, but obviously a great match.
Yeah, I had a fantastic season with three really strong seniors in Kim Hill, Stevie Robinson, and Leela Frederick that I think really, I mean, if you ask kids, you know, how to finish up your collegiate career, I think that the three of them together performed really well. And really, I mean, my emphasis this year was for them to enjoy their senior year. I think kids get so bogged down in, but we haven't been this, we haven't done that. I don't know. You guys just relax. You know, you're not getting it back. So enjoy training, enjoy playing. Let's see what we can do with this group. Plus, I had an infusion of fantastic freshmen. I had three unbelievable freshmen. I have a sophomore setter who I think is one of the best setters in the world, or in the world, maybe not the world, but the country. She could be in the world someday. No, but she's a fantastic setter, Kelly Wolver. So she's matured from last year, freshman setter, to a sophomore, pretty steady. Really ran our offense just fantastically. I've got great coaches in Marcio Ciccoli and Tim Jensen. No, I got a great staff and support. I mean, it was just a magical year. Magical.
Yeah, and as coaches, it's, maybe you can talk about this. It's probably one of those years, beyond the winning, beyond going to the Final Four, you just don't want it to end.
No, I cried all the way home on the plane.
Yeah. I mean, people don't realize the relationships, you're completely invested.
Yeah, I said, you know, some years you always, as a head coach, you have a pulse on your team, but, you know, maybe there's one person kind of blipping off or two that aren't really on your page. And this year, for whatever reason, I really felt like we were all together. I felt like the kids really believed in themselves. They really believed in us as coaches, which is, it's tremendous. You know, I think the kids have to believe in you when you change things and try to implement things. If they don't believe that, they're not going to change if they don't believe that what you're doing is the right thing. So it was magical.
Yeah, you had some special athletes in there. Talk about Leela Frederick. I had a great time watching her. Just the dynamicism that she displays. She's one of those 5'10 kids that can just fly.
You know, like she's 5'10, maybe.
Eight and a half.
Yeah, you know, she's taller than me, but not a lot. She you know, I think at Pepperdine, our strength coach has said that pound for pound, you know, she's the best athlete in our entire university. Any sport, basketball, you know, face everything. She, you know, pound for pound is the best athlete. She lifts more, I mean, because she's teeny, but, you know, she jumps higher. She works harder. I think she increased her jump this year to like 34 inches. She was already like,
wow,
you know, 29.
Nice.
You know, she's just gotten stronger and more confident, and it's really been fun to see her mature as a player and a human being. She's a wonderfully sweet girl, a great, great girl.
Talk about something I've discussed with Brandon several times about recruiting to a small school. Lipscomb and Pepperdine, very similar schools, both in size,
minus
but also
beach.
In the Christianity side of things. Yeah,
right.
You don't have the beach to sell. Talk about trying to sell Pepperdine as a place.
You know, Kevin, I've in my 29 years, I've kind of gotten to the point where if I have to sell Pepperdine, then that kid's probably not coming to Pepperdine. Because I don't think it needs to be sold. You know, and I think if you're selling, then you become a salesman, and then you could have a used car. Maybe, you know, you got a flaw that somebody sees that that they're like, wait a minute, you didn't tell me that. You know, you tend to dwell on all the good things, and, you know, not everything's perfect. And so I look for kids who are Christian kids who are already in that environment. We obviously, you know, you target, you weed out, you're looking for kids who want to go to a small school and who want to go to a good academic institution. So, you know, right there you go boom, 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 and then we go, you know, and then we see if we all fit. And they have to fit, you know, they have to fit with me, and I'm no cupcake.
Brandon was worried about that his whole time at Pepperdine.
Yeah.
Here comes Nina. Look the other way.
I'm telling you, back in the day, 18 years old, I liked volleyball, and you know, I walk into the gym just to watch practice, and I was a big fan, knew all the girls back then, and it's kind of weird.
I probably
actually
kicked him out.
No, you didn't. You were cool with it. But
I think,
you know,
I got thrown out of the gym once. Yeah.
It's kind of neat sitting next to you, to be honest with you. I mean, I never thought I would be a volleyball coach.
Right.
I didn't play at Pepperdine. A lot of people think I did. I got the chance to work out with the team for a couple months and then realized I wasn't good enough. But I got to be around great people like yourself, like Marv. And you know, it's really neat to be, you know, in the NCAA tournament, see my alma mater, Pepperdine, there, and talk to you on the phone and just about that. So it's neat. You know, and again, you know, as I texted you after the match, proud to be a Wave. You guys had a phenomenal year, and I think a lot more is to come for Pepperdine.
Yeah, I think so too, and I think that's the key. You know, you want to keep it here. I mean, we sat that night. I'm seriously, like, hour after we lost, and we're like, okay, how do we keep this going? You know, we have the great kids coming in. How do we make this happen? You know, how do we continue? How do we make these kids understand that this isn't just a one-time deal, that they have to get, that's our goal, to get back here, without it being a pressure thing. So then it's like not a failure thing. You know, it's like, it's tough, you know, but I think we have great kids returning, and we have good kids coming in. So
Nina, you've been at Pepperdine 29 years, is
29.
That right?
Unbelievable.
Young up-and-coming coaches. You know, I've been in the business now 11. Any piece of advice that you can give me, that, you know, obviously you've been through a lot more, and
right,
and I would love to hear, you know,
quit now. Get out while you can.
No, to be honest with you, I'm sure you would
right,
you know, you would say this. It's a great time,
you know,
to be in the business.
I think it's a great time to be in the business. I think that you have to be true to yourself, and you have to enjoy what you do. And I think all of us probably enjoy what we do. But I think if we're coaching for money, or we're coaching for wins and losses, I think sometimes it's really hard to separate everything. But I think you have to be true to yourself as a coach, and not sell yourself short with letting things go on teams, and being true to your morals and ethics, and so that you can look at yourself every day in the mirror and go, you know what, I'm doing a good job. We can win or lose, but, you know, I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. And I think, I don't know, maybe in life, that's my philosophy anyway. I do what I need to do, you know?
Yeah, you know, one of the neat thing about it is, especially for young coaches, you've got a lot of people that are trying to move up or
find the next spot.
And to be honest with you, it's neat to talk to somebody that found the spot.
Right.
Obviously, I'm sure would have had plenty of other opportunities, but you found something you love, you built it, and you know, you continue to take it up another notch,
right,
you know, or try to take
right,
it up a notch every year.
You know, I think being a female coach, you know, you have to, if you want to have a life and a family, if you're married, you know, I'm very fortunate in that, you know, I was fortunate or not fortunate, but my husband was a fireman in Santa Monica. I mean, he had a fantastic job. We weren't going anywhere. I mean,
yeah,
we got married.
You're
and he
staying
had a
in
job.
The canyon.
So I had, you know, I was at UCLA and coached with Andy for 10 years. So I'd been at a big school. And I, you know, when I got the opportunity to come to Pepperdine, I'm like, you know, I've been there. I've been at big. I've been at 40,000. I don't need that. I don't need that. You know, not everyone needs that. So I felt like I'd been at the best in the country, and I went, you know what, I found a really a nice niche at Pepperdine, and the thing that Pepperdine allowed me to do was be a mom and a family person, which is what Pepperdine's all about. It allowed me to play pro ball. I mean, I couldn't have been in a lot of places and doing the things I was doing when I was coaching, a young coach. I mean, I had a six-month-old baby, and I was running the WPVA, which is, you know, the Women's Pro League at that time, Beach,
right.
And I started at being a head coach. I mean, life was a little kooky, to say the least. And winning. I mean, we were winning. That was 85, 86, 3. You know, I was winning.
So it's Manhattan crazy. Beach, Nina Matthews Memorial Pier, right?
How many Manhattan titles do you have? I think there's 8 there.
8?
Maybe.
8 times on the pier. That's her pier.
But, you know, they didn't count, like, a lot. I mean, you know, there's things that they didn't count with all of them.
How many bronze
volleyballs
are there on the pier that have your name on them?
I think there's 8.
Yeah.
But I'm saying that before, like, in the young, like, earlier, like, there's a lot of things they never counted, like wins on the beach, you know.
You know what's crazy, Kevin, is we're sitting here talking about this. We had Patty Bright as a PE teacher.
Yeah.
Right,
I'm sitting next to her. We've had Marv. We had all these people come through, and, you know, it's 10 years, 11 years later, where I keep hearing these names, and now I'm into that world and realize, man, how special a place it is.
Yeah.
I remember your first pick for the Eco Challenge, very popular TV show when we were back in school, the Eco Challenge, Patty Bright, pick number one. Yeah.
There's no doubt. I mean, you could talk about her more, but Hika was just talking about, somebody gave her a shout-out in one of the speeches.
Yep.
And Lizzie
did,
Lizzie remember, Hika made us sign up for her PE life fitness class.
Yeah, life and fitness.
And
yeah,
she
everybody
took it upon
to.
Herself to, like, just crush us. It was me, Hika, J.J. Riley, Jerome Kalama, and crushed us.
Yeah, and she enjoyed every minute of it. And she was probably, like, 60.
Nina Matthews, congratulations on a fantastic season and
a
continuing fantastic career at Pepperdine University.
Thanks for spending
some time with us.
Thanks. Love you guys. You wish. Yeah. Good job.
All right. Nina Matthews out of Pepperdine went out this year in the Elite Eight and came a few points from making it to the Final Four. Would have been incredible. Would have been amazing to have Pepperdine here at the Final Four, Brandon. We would have been freaking out.
I'm telling you.
It would have been an all Pepperdine show.
There's no joke. I was intimidated by her back in the day.
What about now? Are you okay? You sweating? You're in a sweater.
I mean, it's cool.
You buy a new wardrobe just to come to this, for crying out loud?
You guys are way too good looking where I've got to kind of up my game. I mean, and Hambly and Seeley and, you know.
There's your role models right there, Hambly and Seeley. Can I get a show of handsome?
Both of them got great hair, and I've already... I don't have a chance.
You can have a great look without hair. You can look like you're from the future. You can intimidate. You can look mean.
All right.
You can. I don't know if you do.
Dalhauser style.
Dalhauser style. All That's right. All right. Well, hey, I told you, no breaks in this show. We're sitting in San Antonio, live convention special, right in the coach's zone. There's a few people over there looking at us. Listen, we're getting close here. About an hour's time, we're going to be holding the NetLive Volleyball Magazine Mizuno Trivia Shootout. Somebody is going to walk home with an iPad 2. And I mean walk home. We're going to hand it to you. We're not going to promise to mail it to you, not deliver. We're not going to hand you an empty box, like an IKEA box with all that fake electronics. All right, we're going to give you the iPad 2. You're going to take it home. You're going to love it. You're going to break it out of the box. It's going to be yours. So get over here to our table and sign up right now. All you have to do is answer a few questions about the sport that you're here for anyway. So it's not even like we're asking you to get outside of your comfort zone, for crying out loud. Barnett, Rosenthal holding it down. Had all kinds of unbelievable guests. Chris Poole, Mick Haley, Mike Seeley. We're still waiting on Kevin Hambly. We're going to have him in here, and Brandon's going to feel inferior again, feel like his green shirt's not getting it done. We've had Tim Kelly. We've had Molly Alvey, Ann Cortez, Nina Matthews.
Ray Gooden.
I mean, unbelievable. And now sitting down is another guy who's been getting it done at Colorado State University, Tom Hilbert. Tom, welcome to NetLive.
Thanks. Thanks for having me on. This is my first experience with NetLive.
I appreciate the fact, like Rudy or like Reed Sunihara, you're not in your polo, but at least you're in school colors.
That's correct.
Reed is in, like, salmon or something. I don't know what he's wearing.
Reed's Reed, though. I mean,
He's got like a salmon shirt and some sort of what is it? What is it? Linen? Oh, linen pants.
It's like
that's
Santiago.
What it was.
Santiago.
Matt, I'm kind of impressed that you're referring to a color as salmon.
Salmon. Yeah. Well, fuchsia, puce. Where do you want to go? Where do you want to go? So, Tom, tell us a little bit about your program. People that don't know about Colorado State and the Rams. My cousin, former Cam the Ram, as a matter of
is
fact.
Is that right?
Yep, yep. Played yeah. Cam the Ram for a long time, rollerblades and whatnot. But tell us about what's going on up there at Colorado State.
Well, you know, we've had a volleyball program up there that's been pretty good for a while. We've been in the NCAA tournament now. We just finished our 17th straight qualifying year for the NCAA tournament.
Something to dream about, Rosenthal.
17. I've got three right on, but 17 I'm shooting for.
Yeah, and, you know, we're in an area that's not – that's got great volleyball. Colorado has great volleyball, but we don't have a whole lot of schools up and down the Rocky Mountain region. So a lot of the kids in Colorado will go off and play at other schools. You see some in the Final Four here that are playing the – the setter for UCLA, Joe Van Orden, is a Colorado kid. But
yeah, you have Colorado Juniors, you have Front Range, you have quite a few good clubs in the area.
That's right. Norco Volleyball Club, Colorado Performance, there's a lot of good clubs, and they're putting out a lot of good players. We're getting some of those kids, but there's just a really good following for volleyball. And we have a really – our community, one of the things I brag about, is we have great home attendance numbers, average over 2,000 fans a match. Played Nebraska this last year, had 6,750 in for that match, and that was like the third highest match of the year off the island of Hawaii. You always have to qualify that one.
Yeah, asterisk, right?
That's right. But, you know, it's a great place to coach and a great place to live, and, you know, people should – and the people who live there know it, and they follow our volleyball program very religiously.
Tom, talk about scheduling. You guys have always scheduled tough. You continue to schedule tough, but more so now than ever.
Right.
The hot topic amongst college coaches is scheduling and RPI and how that relates to this tournament. And just kind of give us your thoughts and theories on that.
Well, you said that right. It's becoming more important now as the conferences change. You know, we've lost some pretty good teams. We lost BYU and Utah. We now just lost San Diego State. They're going to go into the Big East in football and I think the Big West in other sports. TCU has left. Now, there's some good programs still in it. I think New Mexico is a good volleyball program. We're adding Fresno State. We're adding Nevada. But what this means is that we no longer can say, well, the Mountain West is going to get two or three teams in the NCAA tournament. We have to win our conference. And we have to position ourselves so that if we don't win the conference, we at least have some wins that are valuable to us in terms of getting in the NCAA. So I really believe scheduling good teams, top 50, top 25 RPI teams, nationally ranked teams in our preseason is really important. And then also on the Thanksgiving weekend, if we can get one.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, one of the things when I first came into the business, in comparison to now, you know, those first three or four weekends, you kind of pick some nice places and
right.
some, you know, good teams, but you're kind of looking for some wins. And now it's really much more of a science.
Absolutely, it is. It's a real science. You've got to pick the right people. You can schedule some people and think that was a good person to schedule. All of a sudden, you're going, what happened there? You know, but it makes it now worth it to bring guarantee money into the thing and get people at home who you think are going to be very valuable teams to play. And, you know, my administration's been good. We're now able to go give some people some money to come play us. We also have to schedule returns in order to get people to come in. So there's the days of going somewhere because you have a senior from that area are pretty much over for us.
We were just talking to Nina Matthews about selling Pepperdine, small school, Christian school right on the ocean. Some good things to sell there. Talk about selling Colorado State as a destination. Colorado, great state.
Yes.
Up at where you are, Fort Collins. Talk about
Fort
that area.
Fort Collins is, we call the choice city. It's one of the top 10 places to live in the United States, according to a number of different polls. It is a great place, and you've got unbelievable recreation and things to do right within a very within close proximity. The best skiing in the world, hiking, whitewater rafting, all that kind of stuff. It's a beautiful place. And it's a nice, fun, safe college town to live in. And it is a real college town. And those kind of things are going away, too. And so people, when they come and visit, they are surprised at what a great place it is, how good the climate is. It's much different than people.
The climate is fantastic. Yeah. Having lived in the Springs for 9 years, yeah. people would ask me about it. And I said, look, I came from the Midwest, which has a horrible climate.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Southern California, where it's almost too nice. Like, come Christmas time, I'm just
right.
out of it because it doesn't feel like Christmas. I went to Colorado. You have more sunshine than we have in the beach area.
Mm-hmm.
And you have winter time, but it's winter light. If it's not actively snowing, which I enjoy, it's
winter
probably
light.
Sunny.
That's exactly right.
Beautiful.
And on the Front Range, which you know, the snow doesn't stay for a long time.
No, two, three days.
Yeah, 2-3 days. Sunny, melts it, you're out running. You know, I went out and ran 6 miles the other day with regular shorts and a T-shirt.
The only thing that bugged me is the dryness. That's the only thing that gets to me is the dryness.
It is dry, and you got to get used to that.
But. Tom, talk about the regional sites. Hawaii is the regional site. Everybody knew Hawaii was pretty much going to get a regional site. It was just who was going to get sent there.
Yeah.
Talk about this. You find out Sunday afternoon that you're going to Hawaii, and kind of the experience I had, the sheer madness from Sunday afternoon till about Monday afternoon, early morning Tuesday, when you finally figure out your travel plans.
That's right. It is nuts. And because you know, not only are you going to Hawaii, but it's a Thursday, Friday regional. So, you know, we're on the phone that night. We got the only direct flight from Denver to Honolulu leaves at 9 o'clock in the morning on Tuesday. So, 11 o'clock on Tuesday. We had to leave for the airport at 9 o'clock. So, it's nuts. You get one day of practice. Thank God you get film over the internet. You know what I mean? Otherwise, we'd have no preparation time. And then you're flying to an area that's, you know, time zone difference in elevation, which makes a huge difference, as you guys probably know. And so it's a tough thing to do, to go play an NCAA in Hawaii.
And as control freaks for coaches, to have a half a day to figure out, you know, you got all these other people, but you're trying to figure out every, you know, second of, you know, your trip and whatnot. And this is what I came into, is just like, man, oh man, I had no idea. It drove me crazy just waiting for the NCAA to call to figure out, okay, hey, this is what time you're leaving and whatnot. So, but a great run. Talk about those, you know, your trip to Hawaii, obviously a win.
Yeah.
And then a good, nobody says likes a good loss, but a good loss.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I think, you know, it was a little pod that, to me, I felt like these are teams we can compete with. We're a physical team this year. We block well. We do some good things. And, you know, we played Oregon, who was ranked 13th in the country, a very good volleyball team, especially offensively. And they have a kid named Elaine Bergsma who can really play. But we did a good job. We won the blocking battle 17-6, and that was the difference in the match. Everything else is pretty much even. And we got that win. So then we go on and play Hawaii. We take set one off Hawaii. Set two, I felt like we were in control most of it, but Hawaii and Kanani Danielson are great end-game teams. And she took over at the end of that, and that end of set two really made a big difference.
Yeah, and that momentum shift in Hawaii with that crowd is going to be tough.
It is tough. 10,000 people there making a lot of noise. I will say this, though. I like Hawaii's fans. They're not nasty.
They know the game.
They know the game. They're not nasty hecklers. They're good people. You know what I mean? They're giving you Lay's and candy and stuff.
Yeah, and the food's incredible.
And they like good volleyball.
Yeah, they do.
They're
going
to applaud.
They know
it.
They appreciate
volleyball.
It. Absolutely. If there's a fantastic rally, great, unbelievable rally, and you win it as the opponent, they'll still applaud.
That's exactly right. So that makes it a fun place to play. I don't feel like it's intimidating. I think it's a fun place to play that energizes you.
Tom, we appreciate you sitting in.
Hey,
one last question before you go.
Okay.
Your daughter, 12 years old?
11.
11 still?
Yeah.
Going to play volleyball?
She's doing a lot of volleyball right now. She's in volleyball, soccer, and basketball, and track. But I think
nothing wrong with that.
No, she says she likes volleyball the best. So we've got her out playing a little doubles every once in a while, which I think has really helped her a lot. So that's good.
I like it. Bring back the three-sport high school athlete. I think that's important. Lost art.
You bet.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Tom Hilbert, Colorado State University, sitting in 17 straight. 17 straight, Rosenthal. Something to think about, something to do there in the A-Sun. You have three. Good for you.
Three in a row, four total.
Yeah, but 17 straight, so you're on 14 to go, buddy.
That's impressive.
That's like yesterday when they were putting in the ABCA Hall of Fame class.
Yeah.
Okay, going in from Stanford.
John Dunning. Yep.
Al Skates over across the room.
Yep.
I wanted to say, I left it on the table, I wanted to say when I came back to the podium, I just got a text from the office of Al Skates congratulating John Dunning on an incredible 26 years. An amazing 26 years. Go get him, Higa. An amazing 26 years in volleyball, and good luck in your next 24.
Seriously, I mean, 50 years?
50! No one's doing it again. No one.
That's impressive.
No one is going to set up a system where you can golf that much ever again as a head coach. Never. It's not going to happen. Let's find out if Hugh can wait for Kevin, because we know Kevin's got places to go here. We have heavy hitters right now.
I love it. Hugh, hold on.
I want to get a window into that discussion right there.
Hugh.
Higa, how are you going to manage this?
Hugh, just wait a second.
So we've got Hugh, we've got Hambley, but we know we want to talk to Hugh forever. That's what happens. We sit down with Hugh. Yes, that means you're off the mic.
All right, sounds good.
All right, both of you, come
it's
on.
It's not rainbows and ponies.
Come on.
Just get him to say that.
All right, we'll get him to say it. We're going to sit them both down. We're taking Rosenthal off the mic. We're bringing down two incredible. You know what? You guys actually, you probably have the most national team playing experience while never having played for the national team. But you've played for both teams.
You love to bring that up
every
time.
Every time.
That's not encouraging me to get on. To see, we're going to talk to Brandon. If he's scheduling this stuff.
I wasn't going to bring it up until Hugh sat here, and I thought about Hugh's days when he was almost on the team. Doug was going to talk to New Zealand about his eligibility because he was just tearing us off at outside hitter during one of the winter sessions.
Well, it's too bad he didn't do that when he was at BYU. I mean,
latent evolution, that's all. It just took me a while to figure it out.
Snug in. We've got a tight mic situation here. We have Hugh McCutchen, national team women's head coach, and we'll get his opinion on the national team potential of Kevin Hambley's players. Kevin, you're just back from practice.
Yeah.
Getting ready for your first national team or national championship match.
Yes.
Off an incredible season where you put Illinois in the first spot for the very first time. Did you have this expectation coming into the season realistically? Everybody wants to win. Everybody says, sets that out as a goal. But did you expect to arrive where you are today when you began this year?
It was our only goal. It was our only goal to win the national championship.
And you felt like it was achievable?
I felt like it was achievable. I felt like it was going to take a lot, but that was the goal, and we felt like it was achievable. It was a legit goal for us.
Tell us about the performance of your outside hitters last night, both of them going for just massive numbers of kills. Colleen Ward, Naperville's own.
Yeah,
leading the way, hitting down the line constantly against USC.
Yeah, I thought they both had moments where they were very good, and I thought they had moments where SC had their number, you know, and we kind of rode that wave, and we were fortunate to get enough production out of the rest of them to kind of help us get through a couple of those sets. I don't know. I thought they did what they needed to do to win, but they both played pretty good defense, which we haven't always gotten out of them, and we needed it last night for sure.
So you think defense was the critical part that pushed you guys over the edge in that five-setter?
I thought so. I mean, we out-blocked them, we out-dug them, we out-hit them. I mean, I thought it was because of our defensive effort. We weren't always great offensively. I don't think Annie had her best match. She missed on a couple things, but I thought our defense, we were able to rely on that.
Give us your thoughts on UCLA as you prepare for tomorrow night.
They're fast. They pass. They're probably the best passing team we've seen. They get real quick to the pin. That's just going to challenge our system a little bit. We might have to mix some things up and... they have great balance, as all the teams do at this time as far as offensively. They got, you know, they go pin to pin, and Reeves has really developed this year. I think that's a big key for them. And certainly the pins have been good all year, but now that Reeves is starting to score a little bit more, I think that helps them a ton.
Where's your confidence level with the battle of the supermodels, you versus Sealy?
Sealy kicks my ass, absolutely. And he embraces
it a lot
more.
You're both going salt and pepper.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they're getting old.
We had Molly Alvey on here earlier. She wanted to do a little further research into who was the most handsome.
She doesn't have to look any further than Seals. He's got it down.
I think Seals is more likely to go. He's going to go blue steel on you.
Blue steel on me for
sure.
Yeah. I don't have that in me. But Huey's got the best blue steel anyway. So
I'm more of a Magnum guy.
Oh my goodness! I don't even know where to go now. This interview has hit a wall. You two guys sitting here.
You sit him up, I'll hit him out.
You know, Rosenthal, you kicked him off his mic, which is great, by the way.
Well, someone needed to. Are you kidding me?
He wanted you to come in here and just say, it's not all rainbows and ponies. We have to have that quote. It's not all rainbows and ponies.
That's show 2009, Barney.
Okay, so give us what's new. What's new in the co-opetition area of Hugh McCutchen?
There's nothing new, mate. We're just trying to get better every day. You know how that goes. It's, it's always good to quip a little bit, but at the end of the day... all of the sayings have got to come from a real place, and rainbows and ponies was just an allusion to the whole thing that you can get wrapped up in all of the fluff, but at the end of the day, it's about hard work and grinding, and you know that as much as anyone. And so if you add a little lighthearted spin to it, maybe they can laugh a little bit at it and then change perspective.
You know, I've thought and I've said for a very long time that your addition to our gym, this is back to 2002 with the men's team, prior to 2004, which I thought was really the building block to what happened in 08, kind of the beginning, the genesis of it. But your presence in that gym and the stuff you're talking about, kind of putting a little lighthearted spin on it, was so important to diffusing potentially disastrous situations with the competitive atmosphere that exists. And I thought that it wasn't anything, it didn't seem intentional. It seemed a function of you. And I wonder where that comes from.
I'm not sure if that's a backhanded compliment or what.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Listen, I said for years to anyone who will listen that I felt you were the assistant coach during my time on the national team who actually added to what was happening in a way that nobody else had.
Cheers, Manny. It's good of you to say. And honestly, I can't tell you what it is. I just, you know, call it how I see it. And if we can't...
Do we need to get your mom in here to talk about why you are who you are?
His mom.
We will call down to New Zealand.
I think we need an intervention at some point.
Millie would have him. She'd set you straight, no question.
Yeah. Maybe for next year you can do a surprise cameo for mom.
Hugh McCutcheon, this is your life!
Yeah. Well, no, I just think there was enough, like, you're right, you know, part of the deal with coaching is you got to take the temperature of the room and, you know, figure out what to do with it. And Kevin knows this as well as anyone. I mean, the art and the science of coaching, part of it is, yeah, we got to crunch the numbers and know what we got to do in row two. But part of it is, hey, look, you know, how can we make sure that everyone's on task and on the same page? And, you know, if you got, you know, people that are pissed at other people about stuff, then how about we get them out of that angry place and get them into a place where they can maybe have a bit of a chuckle and get back on task and you know, you don't get angry, get better is what we're about. And so, you know, all the rough and gruff, it's, as much as you need that, you have to need it at the right time. And maybe part of the art of coaching is figuring out, you know, when to come in and diffuse some of that.
Can I get you just to follow me around, like when I'm parenting? Because it would help out a lot for me with my guys that just want to needle me. You know, they're at that age where they figured out how to do it and just want to push my buttons. You would help me settle down and get out of that anger, get back to that happy place.
Oh, I'm still trying to figure it out myself with that little guy. But, yeah, I mean, it's there's no rocket science to it, mate. It's just, you know, like I said, getting a feel for it and working from there.
Kevin, you know, Hugh talks about taking the temperature of the room. Talk about your group right now and what they're going through being at this Final Four success. You had a relatively tough match last night. What's the temperature of your team coming up?
Well, they're tired, but they're confident. You know, I feel like we have gained confidence throughout the tournament, which I think is necessary in order to give yourself a chance. And but, you know, you look around and they're engaged and they're feeling good and they're ready to get the battle tomorrow. I mean, and that's where we want them. I heard Mary Wise, one of her players, chew nails. She said that in one of the interviews. And that's what I felt like yesterday going to that match. They just have this toughness about them and a little edge that you want in a team at this time of year, which is exciting to see.
What has David Niffen added to your staff this season?
He's just a good coach. You know, he, in so many ways, it's been a good guy for me to have around that I can bounce ideas off of, and we can kind of dialogue. And he's very good at playing devil's advocate, and he's a really sharp guy, and he's a philosophy major, so he looks at things with this gray. You know, and sometimes he says stuff, and I'm like, you're not even sure if you're being sarcastic or if you're being honest right now, and that's just kind of how he operates. And I enjoy having him, and the girls really enjoy him. And he does bring kind of the tactical stuff that you see from the men's side a little bit more, because I think it is a little bit that they're playing at a little bit higher tactical level than we are.
Is there stuff that you had to change in your approach to the game when you started coaching women versus maybe the time when you were a player and the way that you viewed the game? And do they view the game a little bit differently and view maybe not the game itself but the interpersonal stuff?
When I was a player, it was like about the big chip on my shoulder, and I was just intense. And yeah, I certainly had to become a lot more cerebral than when I was a player. So I think I'm still learning a lot. I'm still new at this head coaching thing. You know, I don't have the gift of turning a phrase like Hugh either. I have to kind of work my way through it and
think of something on Tuesday and then say it on Friday.
Yeah, it takes me a while to kind of. He could come up with some phrase that everyone's going to quote for the rest of their lives. You know, and in 5 seconds to come up with some topic on it. But I just don't have that. But you know, I'm trying to figure out the best way to be the best me that I can be, and it's a fun process. Just like it's fun trying to help your team be the best team they can be, and I think that's the best part about it. It's just the puzzle, trying to put that together.
If your team's going to win tomorrow night, what's the piece of the puzzle that really has to get put down?
It's so boring, but it's just going to be serving pass and who's in system more, and can we slow down their outsides? And I think it goes both ways. Can they stop our outsides? I think it's the best matchup we've seen of two really good outsides going at it on both sides of the net.
Somebody said to me that the women's game today, right now, is left side dominant. Is that true?
I think it's been that way for a long time. I think if you can add a piece, we have a nice right side attacker like Penn State had the last few years. We had some good lefts and then a great right side that can change some things. And we saw that in Lizzie, I thought, in the fifth set. McMahon, she was big for us, and she kind of spread them out and gave us some balance. And, you know, that's going to be important, but it's going to come down to the left at the end of the day.
Why isn't the right side back row a bigger part of women's volleyball right now?
There's not a lot of kids that are playing the right side position that even play back row. You know,
is that because kids can't, or the juniors can't teach it? Is that why? Because it seems like the athletes are there in a lot of cases.
I don't know if it's not that they can't teach it. It's that they got all these kids they got to play. You know, they're all paying money, and so you have these little guys out there, and they got to get them on the court. You know, I think it's the nature of the club system how it is. And all these kids are paying, and they want to keep everyone happy, and they need to because they need to have people around. And so all the little guys play in the back, and the big guys play in the front. And, you know, it hurts the development of our programs.
All right, well, we'll get into some longer esoteric discussions when you don't have better stuff to think about. Thanks for sitting down with us for a little while.
I appreciate it.
All right, Kevin Hambly from Illinois, just taking off, going to play in his first national championship, coaching his first national championship coming up tomorrow. Tomorrow evening here in San Antonio at the Alamo Dome. Hopefully we'll get blown to the stadium the way we did last night. It was a quick walk last night, Hugh. Some higher power wanted us to really be there.
It was very fast. I was there with my wife and our son in a little stroller, and one way it was a bit of a workout. The other way it was like we were on a sail or something. You know, we were just holding on and taking it. So it was, anyway.
Hey, you and I had a chance to catch up last night a little bit after a World Cup. You guys had a fantastic season. Really, I couldn't think of a better year. You win Grand Prix, you go, and as I talked with Destiny earlier, and I know there have been some concerns and stuff I've heard through the grapevine about the way the team performed against Japan, but the tournament was basically over entering that Japan match. You have a fantastic tournament. You qualify for the Olympic Games. Mission accomplished for 2011.
Yeah, I actually spoke to this earlier. You know, I it's weird to me that a team can win Grand Prix, you know, qualify for the Olympics, get a silver medal at the World Cup, which is the highest finish the women have ever had. And yet the sentiment when we came home from a lot of people was not like, how great is it that you're ranked number one in the world? But it's like, geez, what happened against Japan? And
who are those people?
Yeah, yeah, the haters. And so, you know, and the reason that it kind of gets me a little bit is that I believe this group does their best every single day to represent this country and represent our sport the best way they can. And you know, until you've walked a mile in our moccasins, you know, I think it's a little bit premature to judge what it is to have to invest in a tournament that's 11 matches in 14 days, to have to play the best team in the second to last match to for the right to qualify and then have to step back into the, you know, arena the next night against a team ranked 3 in the world, Japan. It's not like they're dog meat. You know, this is a good team that's playing at home in front of whatever it was, 15,000 fans, and it's a battle. And you know, we didn't win, and we're not going to win every match. So let's just deal with that right now. But to come home and have that match be somehow the focus of it all just seemed a little bit strange. And I think a little bit insulting to this body work that this team has achieved and that they've worked tirelessly over the 7-month season to put it together. So there's my two cents on that.
Yeah, I had a few people say something about, oh, you put the uniform on, you ought to play hard, and this and that. I'm like, they didn't not play hard. This is a surreal situation, a tournament structure that is set up in a way that you'll never see again in any sort of tournament, where your last match is meaningless, essentially, to what the overall goal is.
That's right, and anyone who says that we didn't care or that we weren't invested, you know, that's completely inaccurate. It's as far from the truth as we can get. The bottom line is the athletes came out there, they talk about how much they wanted to win it, how much it would mean. They understood what was at stake. But at the end of the day, we weren't good enough to beat that team, and that's that.
Well, talk about your gym, because that gym, from top to bottom, and at this point, what, 25 players maybe in the gym? And that'll start to get cut down at the very beginning of next year. But from top to bottom, I have never seen a more talented gym, men's or women's, at any time in my involvement with USA Volleyball, or even as a fan of USA Volleyball when I was still a college player.
Well, that's... it's nice of you to say. I think that's true. We have some depth, and we've started to develop that. I think at the beginning of the quad, we had a lot of talent, a lot of volleyball athletes. I think now we have a lot of volleyball players. That's a direct result of their work and their investment in the process and commitment to the goal, but also, you know, we've got a wonderful staff, and Karch, Paula, Jamie, Jenny, our trainers, everyone's in there helping them get better, I think it's that, I don't know, organization-wide commitment to what we're trying to do that helps us. So it's been great.
How much scouting are you doing here for next year?
Yeah, you know, honestly, 2012, we've had a look at the players here. I'm not sure there's anyone that's going to jump up and surprise us. And that's no disrespect to the talent here. I mean, there's a lot of good volleyball players, but we all know that, you know, even for the best players, the jump from the college game to the international game is a very large one, and we're looking at a three-month season here. You know, we're going to start in May. We're going to be done sometime, whenever it is, 15th of August is when it's all over. So I can't imagine this time for someone to come in, establish himself in the group, get up to speed in the international arena, and have an impact.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about next fall in Minnesota.
First things first.
How much do you know about your opponents when you enter the college coaching ranks?
Listen, I feel very fortunate that I have had to do almost nothing with Minnesota at this point. I'm very happy that I know that that's where I'm going to end up. And as you know very well from this four-year life that we lead, the quad-to-quad life, that, you know, the exit strategy part of it is very hard to manage. And that the fact that Minnesota was so willing to deal with a transitional strategy and to help so that I could finish what I've started here, it's awesome. So, yeah, I'm honestly thinking, I was just telling Wiz this morning, we woke up and she slept great, and I'm like, yeah, I was dog meat. I'm thinking about what we got to do in London, and so I can't get away from it, you know. And when we're done with that, then, yeah, I'll certainly start waking up at 4 in the morning about Minnesota, but there's no time for that right now.
So you're looking down 7 months of really bad sleeping nights until you get off the plane in London.
Well, I think that's, at the end of the day, you know, we have this responsibility to do everything we can. And you know, if I wake up before because I got stuff on my mind, I got to write it down. I got to do it. And we'll sleep in due course, you know. But right now, we got a chance to do something really special. And I don't know what that means in terms of the result, but the group that we have and the athletes that we have, the staff that we put together, it's such a unique opportunity, and we got to make sure we leave no stone unturned.
Yeah, with the success you've had, Grand Prix last year, Grand Prix this year, great finish at World Cup, qualified for the Olympics, ready to go. What are the one or two issues, big issues, that you're really needing to deal with when the team comes back in that April-May timeframe?
Yeah, I think we got to work a little bit on our blocking, and I think just a few things offensively, a few wrinkles we want to add. And, you know, as always, just serving and receiving. I mean, those are, I know Kevin was talking about them earlier, and, you know, saying that they're boring, but, you know, if you know the game, you know that those are the keys, and you know, we can still improve a ton in those phases of the game. I think we're good. I think we can score a few more points if we can just be a little bit better at picking apart the right passer or getting the right serve in the right spot in the right rotation. So those will be the main things, I think.
Hugh McCutchen, thanks for sitting in with us for a little while. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure. Yeah, cheers, Bonnie.
Any parting words? Any phrases?
No.
Co-opetition? Rainbows and ponies?
No. None of that. Just
a popular Hughism right now on the team?
Here's all I want to say is just every day this team and our staff, we go to bat for USA, and we're doing it for USA Volleyball, and we're trying to represent this country and the sport that we love. And you know, we're going to be good enough or not at the end of it, but just know that it's not for a lack of commitment, a lack of trying, or a lack of passion for what we're doing. And, yeah, we understand the responsibility we have. We take it very seriously. So hopefully everyone can support us and, you know that we're doing it all for them.
It's been a fantastic ride so far. I look forward to seeing you over in London.
Cheers, Kev.
It'll be a lot of fun.
All right.
Hugh McCutchen, head coach of the women's national team, sitting in here at convention as a crowd begins to gather. Dan Mickle, front and center, longtime fan, longtime listener. Here with his shirt on, I think the trivia challenge, I see a few more names going down there. Listen, if you're standing around here, and you're going to be here in about 5-10 minutes, we're going to fill out this big board here with some people. We have some questions. We're going to ask them, and at the end, whoever answers the most questions is going to take home an iPad 2. And I mean take home. Not this IKEA stuff, not this fake stuff, oh, it's in the mail, it's coming to you. We're going to take it out from underneath the desk here next to me, and we're going to hand it to you. So register now for the NetLive Volleyball Magazine Trivia Shootout right here next to me. Brandon Higa, production assistant for the day. What are you telling me? You know, we were going to talk to Jerry. I don't know if Jerry's around. Do we have Francisco? Oh, Jerry's right here. Let's get Jerry on the mic. Let's get Rosenthal back here on the mic. Let's get Francisco first, then we'll talk to Jerry real quick. We appreciate you listening. Hope you're getting this via iTunes. It is free, available on iTunes. We have going on 3 years now of content up there. I think they keep 2 years up on iTunes. Keep you available. Where did Brandon Rosenthal go? An extended bathroom break, or he's gone? He's gone. All right, I'll see him at Roots Chris later. Francisco, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Welcome to the Net Live.
Thank you.
Francisco, we're kind of doing this on the fly, so you can, yeah, throw those on. You got to tell me, Francisco Hervas?
Hervas? That's right, Hervas.
Hervas, Hervas. Hervas. Okay, now I'll try and say it right. So you're the Spanish junior national team head coach?
I was that last year. Before, I was 5 years head coach for the men's national team and 3 years head coach for the women's national team.
Oh, okay. And it says here that you coached Eric Sullivan, who started the show back in 1998.
That's right.
In Malaga, Spain, you were his coach.
That's right.
And now you're here to try and find a job in the United States. Is that accurate?
Between other things, I know. It was a big experience. My wife is American. We all have been thinking about the possibility of moving back here. And it looks like a good chance to come here and meet people.
You're looking for an assistant job, or you're looking for a head job?
Probably would be a system because
learn the system.
I know there's a lot of rules that you have to learn. I know some of them, but I'm not too familiar with all of them. So a year or so working with somebody who knows the rules, it would be very helpful. That's great.
We've been trying to get our athletes here in touch with the international scene over there. Mm-hmm. Talk about how the systems differ. Here we have kind of a junior system, and we have a high school system as far as the junior athletes go. What does it look like for junior athletes? I mean, I've been there, but tell our listeners all about how it works if you're a young athlete coming up in the volleyball system in Spain, Italy, those kinds of places.
Well, the difference between in Europe, sports is based in clubs. So there is not many schools that do volleyball high level. So everybody will come out of a club. If a club is good, you can always sign for them as a professional when you finish, or you can move to other countries and try out. In Spain, we have a permanent group of working with kids and women who are from 14 to 17 with the, for 3-4 years, the only thing they do is play volleyball and study. Those players, when they finish, they will choose whatever club they want because they don't belong to any, but the level is pretty high since they're really concentrated on learning and playing international since they are 14.
They're logging a lot more hours in the gym, that's for sure.
But you can be sure they practice probably from 5 to 6 hours a day.
Fantastic. All right, tell us an Eric Sullivan story.
Eric Sullivan was very funny. We were at the airport, and I met an American guy, and I told him, well, I'm looking for an outside hitter. Do you know anyone? He told me that Eric Sullivan was coaching training, and he was a libero, but he played outside in UCLA. Why don't we try it out? And did a few questions, and he came to Spain, and it was a very pleasant surprise, actually.
What's different about American players versus European players when it comes to mentality?
Everything is very different. I mean, probably Americans are very team-oriented. They like to play more for the team. Europeans, since they have that probably sense of survival, sometimes they look more for their own performance than for the club, which is different. But at the same time, sometimes American players have problems to play in Europe because the system is is a lot more open, so they feel more comfortable playing on a club or in a team who is working as a team. And individuals in Europe get better results, so they feel a little bit lost and they struggle to take a good performance. But with Eric in Spain, we were so happy, and still people remember the way he played.
Yeah, I know. For my professional teams, it was always that they enjoyed that, even though you're down 0-2.
Mm-hmm.
The American player is not going to quit, not going to start thinking about going out for a smoke afterwards or finishing out having a nice dinner.
I know, let's stay
here and win.
That's right. Very committed. Good spirit, good fighting. But I've been trying to learn from the USA since I started playing. So I always try to get that that idea of playing on my teams. Probably, I think that Eric was very comfortable on Malaga.
Well, I think you make a great point. I mean, you talk about the fight of some of the U.S. players, but really we're at a deficiency, I think, to some of the technical superiority of players who've been playing since they were 12 years old and playing in a club and seeing the level that's possible in Europe. I think that's a huge positive for the European players, not to necessarily be on the court if they're not good enough at that age to be on the court with some of the greats at the time, but to know that's where you need to be.
That's right. And that's the difference. I mean, I think that the best thing that a coach can do is learn from all over the world what do they have to offer. So I think America has a lot to offer in learning, and Americans, I think they have a lot to learn too when they go to Spain or to Europe in this case. Competition is very difficult, survival is very difficult, but if you do, you become a better player. So when you go back to your country and play on your national team, you're a better player. Something improves both levels.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Francisco Hervas, good luck getting a job. I know that you will add definitely to someone's program here and give them a perspective they didn't previously have about the sport.
I hope so. Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming on and spending a little time with us. Appreciate it. Francisco Hervas from Spain, junior national team coach, now looking for a position here. Undoubtedly, we'll see him back here at convention next year representing some school. And now we're going to bring on our final guest of the day, AVCA Hall of Famer. And keep in mind, Jerry, we don't have too much tape left, okay? Here, you got to use these. Those are just thrown up here for prop, you know. Now, I'll turn your mic back on. This is ABCA Hall of Fame member, newly minted member, Jerry Maticata. Jerry, you told a great story yesterday. You've been involved in the grassroots level, really a guy that's been in the trenches. I mean, I'm just up in the ivory tower. You are down. You are living at the town that is outside the walls of the castle in which I am located.
That's correct.
And you are doing the hard work necessary to make my life possible and easy at the national team level. So I appreciate your serfdom. Now, tell people a little bit about, you're responsible for a lot of D3 stuff. NECVA is the pronunciation of the acronym.
Correct, Northeast Collegiate Volleyball Association.
You've been responsible for tremendous growth at the D3 level in the men's side of the game. Talk about that process of getting involved with the sport of volleyball and then really being a big part of that development.
Well, as I said yesterday, I actually was a touch tackle football player that got killed and ended up, my wife gave me registration for a recreational volleyball league, and I joined it, and that's how I got involved in volleyball. Actually, because I was getting murdered every week and volleyball had no contact. But once I got involved in the sport, I saw that it was a great sport. And one of the reasons I really appreciated it was the people who play it were important to me. Kids, students of character, students who wanted to get good grades, and students that wanted to have an athletic experience. And really, what I saw, where do I fit in this? And I saw it at the D3 level. Now, when we first started, D3 was sort of falling apart, and there was a lot of naysayers saying that volleyball was going to, you know, leave, but men's volleyball was going to be what the NCAA called a dying sport, which I had to speak last year about at the NCAA convention.
I don't think it's dying right now. I look around, I see life.
Right, but that's how they viewed it, because they sort of linked us with wrestling and gymnastics and teams, and the NCAA were going down. I said that we can move this sport ahead. It's not a dying sport. It actually is a reviving sport. And what we did was we put a foundation together where schools could come and have good volleyball on a small scale to begin with. But my view was to have 100, 150 D3 teams, which would be the basic foundation of volleyball in this country. And I thought that we would, from that grassroots, we would move up and have better players on D1 and D2 level, and all together we would be able to produce great people, but also people for the national team.
So where are you in that process? How many D3 teams are there now compared with 20 years ago?
20 years ago we started with 5 teams. We now have 60 teams, and I predict within 5 years we'll have 100 teams, because the NCAA championship, getting a championship,
which will occur for the first time this coming year.
Correct. In 2012 at Springfield College last weekend in April, though, that emphasis on a national championship was necessary for growth. And as we grow, we're getting better players coming because there are more situations for them to play in. And last year we had four kids try out for the national team from D3. The reason that you'll have players from the national team, Kevin, which I heard your broadcast coming from D3, is that there are going to be great athletes that are going to go to D3 schools because of the academic excellence of these schools. And here's an opportunity to play great volleyball on a high level, win a national championship, and yet get a great education. These are going to be the type of athletes that you're going to want on the national team. Character athletes, great achievers in school, and great achievers on the volleyball court.
Well, the growth has got to come from somewhere. It's not going to come at the Division I level with the restrictions that have been placed on it as far as scholarship money goes. So kids are going to have to make choices based on different sets of circumstances, and that's one of those things. Jerry, before I let you go, talk about your feelings being inducted to the ABCA Hall of Fame yesterday.
Well, yesterday was a great day for me personally, but really the students of Division III and coaches of Division III have been emailing me and telling me that this is a great event for them. They felt that they were getting into the Hall of Fame because they felt neglected in the past, but now the recognition that was there for them happened yesterday. So personally for me it was great, but it was also great for the thousands of students that have come through Division III volleyball and the coaches who have sacrificed a lot to play volleyball on that D3 level.
Well, fantastic. Appreciate all the work you've been doing to keep the game growing, and grow the game is something you said yesterday, something I've seen around, Gary Sato sending out, other people echoing that sentiment on Facebook. I think it's a great sentiment, and thanks for being a real driving force behind that.
Kevin, always great to see you again, and keep up the good work on radio.
Thank you, Jerry. Jerry Manicotta, ABCA Hall of Famer as of yesterday, joining us here on the Net Live. Brandon Rosenthal's Runaway. The trivia contest is coming up here just shortly. If you haven't registered yet, I see more names on the list. We're looking for 64 brave souls, or at least 64 people who want to take home a free iPad. I can't imagine that we couldn't find 64 people that want a free iPad. I mean, Jay is hoping that we only have 30 people or maybe 10 people that want a free iPad. That's his hope. He wants to try and take it home. But, hey, it's been a fantastic show. It's been a lot of fun to sit in here. Unbelievable guest list. All the four of the final four coaches, Chris Poole, Kevin Hambley, Mike Seeley, Mick Haley, all joining us here on the program. Hugh McCutcheon sat in for a little while. Tim Kelly, agent Molly Alvey. All kinds of unbelievable guests sitting in here. People that I can't even remember that were here. We've blown through them so quickly. So thanks to everyone who made the time to show up. Thanks to everyone who's been here kind of milling around the coaches zone. We're going to have a little fun with this trivia contest. And if you want to stay in touch with us, thenetlive@gmail.com. Be sure and download us on iTunes. We are free. We've got a couple of great sponsors coming up. We want to make sure we thank our sponsors, Volleyball Magazine, of course, Mizuno, who is sponsoring the Trivia Shootout. There's another Net Live t-shirt. Like to see that. So we've got lots of good stuff happening. Inspire Institute coming on board next month. I think Mizuno coming on board next month on a regular basis. Really going to be good stuff. Thanks to everybody that tuned in. Thanks to everybody here. Brandon Rosenthal, big thanks to him for sitting in. Chris Geeter McGee for calling in. Fantastic stuff here on the Net Live. We will see you again next week. We're looking at probably an evening show after we get back from this, but we'll get it out there and let you know what's happening. We're going to leave you with a little bit of Dan Madden. Come on and say yes. Hope you tune in and check out the championship. It's coming up Saturday night, Illinois, UCLA. More Net Live next week. Get me to climb.